Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with Dr. David Matlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to be going over the Obama jobs bill and the kind of the response by the Republicans, which, as you would expect, obstruct, delay, and, of course, change the subject. Because obviously they don't have a jobs bill of their own. They don't have a clue. They don't have an idea. All of the things that they are proposing, same failed mess that got us into this. The same old tired, oh, we need more tax cuts for rich people because they create jobs. No, they don't. And they're sitting on piles of cash that they're already not using to create jobs. Been there, done that, seen that movie, bad ending. We need to deregulate because, you know, we need to let big corporations pollute and destroy the environment. That'll create jobs. Well, we've seen that as well. And that movie didn't end well either. So we'll be talking about that with Dr. Matlin. Also in the second hour, Lori Clausen, editor over at labor.dailyco.uk, going to be talking about the week of labor news. And, you know, what's amazing to me is, you know, all of this attack on teachers, all of this attack on public sector workers, almost mindless, especially when you talk about some of the numbers that are coming out and some of the studies that we're going to talk about tonight that show that, look, all of this contracting out, all of this privatization good, government bad, actually costing us a lot more money. So we're going to talk to Lori about what's going on with teachers and whatever else is on the agenda over there at labor.dailycos.com. And also Siri Stevens, executive director of Planned Parenthood Pennsylvania. She's going to be here talking about Michelle Bachmann's claim. And I almost can't believe that this came out of her mouth. There's a woman out there who her daughter got the HPV vaccination, and now she's retarded. I'm having a real hard time with that one. Up until she's 12 years old, she's fine. She gets the vaccine, and now she's all of a sudden retarded. I would like to see the woman who brought this claim forward, and I'd like to examine the brain cells inside Michelle Bachmann's head for thinking that that was a good way to go with this. So we'll talk to Siri Stevens more overly about the attacks on women's rights, and that's what this really is. It is an attack on women and their reproductive rights. So that'll be interesting. Also, your calls 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So we're cleaning up from the big mess. The governor has asked for help from the federal government. And what happened? Well, last night the Democrats in the Senate tried to get a package pushed through, $7 billion in disaster relief. And what happened? Well, the Republicans blocked it. The vote was 53-33 because evidently in our democracy you need a supermajority to pass anything through the U.S. Senate. You need 60 votes. Last night, Pat Toomey voted against federal funding to help with FEMA and the disaster relief. And, you know, look, You know, Toomey and his Republican wrecking crew, they united against the idea of emergency fundings for disaster victims. What I find interesting, and really it's kind of one of those things, is that they never had a problem. There was never a problem in the past of passing emergency spending for Iraq or Afghanistan, and, oh, they need a new school or a new hospital, appropriate that money. I mean, we can go over to the sandbox and we can rebuild the sandbox that we destroyed, but we just can't seem to find a way to help rebuild our own backyard. That doesn't seem to be on the agenda. We need to punish people. We need to cut other programs. We need to destroy what we've already built here so we can help folks out. Now look, FEMA's they're close to broke. They got around $300 million, which, you know, sounds like an awful lot of money, but when you're talking about having 10 billion-dollar natural disasters, and I think this one's 11 now. I think we're up to 11 natural disasters that have happened this year that are going to cost in excess of $1 billion. FEMA was never given that kind of a budget. So now what's going to happen, now that the Senate passed this, they're going to push it over to the House, where House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Mr. Cut, Gut, and Punish, said yesterday that the House wants a little smaller package. Yeah, we want a little smaller package because not so big, maybe to make it through the end of the month. So, you know, when I heard that, I said, let's cheat those people. Let's cheat them. Yeah, their house floated away, all their possessions gone. Let's see if we can, you know, just jab them a little bit more. Let's kick them while they're down. Sounds like a great idea to me. So Cantor wants to withhold disaster funds. Think about this. He wants to withhold these funds from people whose their lives have floated away. He wants to, I almost can't say this. He wants to withhold the funds until you and I agree that helping them has to come at the expense of the future. We got to stop investing in the future. We got to get rid of those fuel efficiency programs. Got to get rid of that. Don't worry about it. We got to get rid of any idea of publicly funding any rail projects. Get rid of that because, you know, that's where the waste and the fraud and abuse is, they claim. So if we do away with our future, if we do away with any thought of what tomorrow may look like, then and only then will we allow you to help those people. So like I said, the Senate then passed the bill today. They got enough votes. There were, I think, 8 Republicans, Roy Blunt, Missouri, Scott Brown, Massachusetts, John Hoeven, North Dakota, Dean Heller, Nevada, of course, Toomey here in Pennsylvania, Vitter, Louisiana, and Collins and Snow, both in Maine. And my producer and I were talking about, you know, Roy Blunt. He's going, why Roy Blunt? I go, Joplin, hello? Because FEMA actually had stopped. They had actually stopped rebuilding Joplin because they didn't have any money. So if Blunt votes against this, kiss his sorry little bitter behind goodbye. Because the people there would, I think they would probably hang him. Draw him, quarter him, do whatever. So he had to vote for it. Here in Pennsylvania, Toomey had to vote for it. Especially here in the center part of the state where a lot of people are really struggling. Because this is supposedly the right-wing wrecking crew. This is their home base. So you go screwing these people. They may get rid of Toomey next time around. But you look at this, and again, you know, it highlights the fact that these people, for the most part, 33 Republicans, voted against helping their neighbors. I mean, to me, that's just insane. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, you know, again, they don't care about the poor people in their neighborhood anyway. In fact, a lot of their policies are what would have put them there. You know, I look at this study conducted by AARP. They conducted it with the folks at the University of Kentucky and the University of Illinois. And this study found that food insecurity has increased by 63% in my age bracket, somewhere between 40 and 49, 37% between the folks 50 and 59. 63% increase in working age population, 37% of those 50 and 59. Food insecurity. You know, that's what we used to call hunger. That's what we used to call worrying about where your next meal's coming from. Now we have a nice soft word for it. It's food insecurity. No, that's called my stomach is grumbling and there's no food coming. And you look at the numbers are increasing. And what are we doing? Well, we got Cantor. We've got the Republicans saying, you know what, we need to gut those programs. So we'll only help those people who have been harmed by the disasters. If we can take that money that helps feed those people, helps those poor people, and we'll shift it over. That's it. And you look at the numbers that just came out of the new census numbers. The poverty rate in this country is at the highest it's been since 1983. 15.1% of this population, that's about one in six. Over 46 million people living below the poverty line. And understand, and the numbers for this are out as well. Average income is way up. I mean, the average income numbers are way up. And why is that? Well, because there's a lot of money in the economy. The problem is it's just not being distributed right. We have a very top-heavy economy. The very wealthy are doing very well. Everyone else, well, you're on your own. So, I like to say if, Bill Gates and Shaquille O'Neal and I are in a room, we've got a pretty good income as an average. I'm still poor. They're billionaires. Me, I'm still, down at the bottom there. But they bring me up on the average. You kick them out of there, we're broke. And which is why you see the numbers. The numbers are that the median income is going down. And what I find interesting about these poverty numbers, the number of people who are 16 and over who didn't work at least a week last year increased to 86.7 million people. We got almost 90 million people who have no work whatsoever. Now, to me, it's all about the jobs. And I find it absolutely incredible that the Republicans would take a position that they're not going to pass this jobs bill. It's not enough. Because it's never going to be perfect enough. We're never going to give them enough. It's never going to be what they want. They're always going to find a reason to turn it down. Because if it works, they can't win in 2012. And they know that. And they've said as much. Why would we give him a win, they say? Because we got him on the ropes. All we got to do is tank the economy for the next 14 months, and he's out of here. And you look here in Pennsylvania, the median income has declined as well. In fact, it's fallen by almost $3,000 since the recession. $3,000. It dropped from $51,679 in 2006-2007 to just $48,700. A massive drop. Now, that's even more than the drop of the nation, because the nation only dropped by 4.7%. So Pennsylvania workers lost an extra percent of their wages. Poverty here in Pennsylvania sits unchanged at almost 12%, 11.8%. We're losing employer-sponsored health care because, of course, the employers are pulling all that stuff back because there's a good opportunity. There's a good opportunity to say, well, just be happy you have a job. Just be happy. And now what you're seeing is this shifting. The shifting away from employer-based healthcare to you and I, government-based healthcare. Because, more Pennsylvanians are relying on public health insurance. Over 1.7 million people, they're saying one in six. One in six people. And if you look at the children, nearly one in three children are getting healthcare from the government. There's something seriously wrong. You're looking at almost a third of the kids. And what's the Republican view? Well, the Republican view is basically screw them. Screw them. They're on their own. This is an ownership society. And the problem is you poor people don't own enough. It's all about the jobs, and the jobs. In fact, wasn't that the 2010 election cry that the Republicans kept telling us they would do nothing but focus on jobs, jobs, jobs? I guess I missed that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. David Madelin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. Back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to Wins. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Monday, AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka blasted an attempt by House Republicans to strip the National Labor Relations Board of real power to sanction corporations for illegally moving jobs in retaliation for workers exercising union rights. A Republican House bill would prohibit the NLRB from ordering any employer to close, transfer, or relocate employment under any circumstance. It was triggered by an NLRB complaint charging that Boeing illegally intimidated and threatened union workers by citing strikes as part of the reason Boeing built a plant in South Carolina.
This is a sweeping legislation that would gut the National Labor Relations Act and result in serious harmful changes to jobs and workers' rights throughout the country.
Boeing worker and International Association of Machinists member Pat Bertucci.
After negotiations broke down during our last contract and we exercised our right to strike, I was shocked to hear and see that the Boeing company would relocate the 787 line because we struck. When I learned that the NLRB had brought the case forward, I was proud. I was proud to see someone standing up to defend our rights, even against a big company like Boeing. The NLRB has not allowed us to pursue this case with the way their law was written. We're all going to be in a lot of trouble, and every American's right to be in a union will be threatened.
Texas labor law professor Julius Gettman says that the Boeing case is just a reasonable effort by the labor board to protect the legal rights of workers.
All they're doing is standing up for the rights of workers, and they're being pilloried as though they were trampling on the Constitution.
Some U.S. senators are trying to end discrimination against the nation's unemployed. Jesse Russell reports.
One job search site made waves last week when it announced it would no longer accept job listings that discriminate against the unemployed. Indeed.com said they made the decision because it fits with the company's philosophy of providing the best job search experience for job seekers. The millions of unemployed in the country have come face to face with a new hurdle during the last 2 years, potential employers who will only hire individuals who are already employed. Currently, it isn't against the law to discriminate against the unemployed, but Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown is co-sponsoring a bill that could change that practice.
I don't want to tell an employer whom to hire, but I also don't think employers should automatically exclude those people that are trying so hard.
The Fair Employment Opportunity Act bars employers and employment agencies from excluding job applicants simply because they're unemployed. The Senate legislation mirrors a bill already introduced in the House.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America, the National Education Association, and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So President Obama hit the road today touting the benefits of his American Jobs Act. He was in Ohio, and he heavily emphasized the portion of his plan that funds building and repairing some 35,000 schools across the nation. And, of course, the Republican response, well, predictably, they evidently seem more interested in changing the topic. Evidently, they want President Obama's uncle, who was arrested for drunk driving in Massachusetts, to come testify in front of Congress. I can see how those fit. And why do they want that? Because they need the diversion. They desperately need the diversion because they fear they're going to be found out. They have no jobs plan. They've got nothing. It's the same crap that got us into this mess. But here to talk to us about President Obama's job plan, Dr. David Madlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Dr. Madlin, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks very much for having me.
You know, I look at this jobs plan, which on Friday, Mark Zandi said could create some 1.9 million jobs, grow the economy by 2%, cut unemployment. The Republicans not really interested in taking this up. Don't seem to care.
Well, you know, they are, Republicans have made some rejections, but, you know, if you listen to what Boehner, the Republican House leader, said right afterwards, it at least merits consideration. Now, that's not, we're going to pass this right away, but sadly, considering where we've been lately, that's a start. And so I think, you know, it's, I wouldn't expect Republicans to do much, but the Obama has an opportunity here really to push them to make it clear how obstructionist the Republicans have been to and opposed to doing really anything that will create jobs.
You know, I look at this plan, and the reality is there's a lot of things in it that, even I don't know that I agree with fully. These are things that Republicans have, been touting in the past. I really don't understand why they wouldn't jump on it. You know, the investment bank. Basically, to me, those are just more P3s, another way of, public money being put to use for private interests. But they don't seem to, be all that interested in, pushing this, through.
Well, you know, that's this package was basically crafted by pretty much everything that in the past some a fair amount of Republicans have supported as job creation efforts. And so I think, you know, President Obama's argument is he's calling the Republicans bluff.
Right.
Is he's putting out, here is a package that you should be able to support. It has ideas that you, it's tax cuts for businesses, tax cuts for workers. It is money, it's an infrastructure bank that money for private investment. It also has some direct job creation for teachers, for firefighters and first responders, and for other infrastructure. But in the past, Republicans have supported some of that spending. So I think really what you're going to have here is a very clear choice. You know, you mentioned Mark Zandi. He was the economist for Republican candidate John McCain. Not you know so this is a reasonably, you know, it's not just Obama's economist saying this is going to create jobs. But so Obama's putting out something that's going to create jobs. He's built on bipartisan ideas that have had lots of Republican support. Now, the question is, are Republicans going to do anything, or is this going to be the central campaign issue for the next year, year and a half?
I think it's going to have to be. I mean, the reality is, and I don't know how the president then comes back to his far left constituents and says, you know, this is what I've done. Vote for me now, because, you know, again, it's more public money to private investment. This whole thing with tax cuts for corporations and workers, this is coming at the future of Social Security. There's some blowback from that. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, the fact that he's going to be cutting the Social Security payroll tax in half, to me, that's kind of worrisome.
Well, the important thing is the way that is structured is it is designed so that the Social Security fund does not lose any money. The Treasury makes up that and puts it in. I think the real worry to Social Security is down the line is whether we actually can bump back the tax rates up to the normal level so that the Social Security has an ongoing sustainable supply of money. But this bill keeps Social Security on exactly the same track it's on. It's just a way of delivering tax cuts to workers.
Okay.
Because, as you know, the payroll tax is the biggest burden, biggest tax burden for almost all workers, because it hits everyone earning under $100,000.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were actually paying that out of the Treasury, because you're absolutely right. It is the quickest stimulus. It is the quickest way to get money into people's pockets. It's not the Bush method where they sent out checks and they sent out letters to tell you your Bush prize was coming. It's actually directly in your check without a lot of administrative stuff. So, you know, I can see that being a smart idea.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they do it on both ends. They do it for the employer side as an incentive for employers to hire more workers, and then they also do it on the worker side, so that's more cash in workers' pockets. And the critical thing there is, and really behind most of the Obama jobs plan, is the understanding that the core problem in today's economy is a lack of demand. There isn't enough demand in order for businesses to want to hire people. No one's going to buy their products, so there's no need for them to hire more workers. So you have to figure out a way to create more demand. And behind all of these ideas is creation of demand.
Right.
And that stands in really sharp contrast to the Republican proposals, which are all about how do you create more supply. And as we know, the supply is not the problem right now in the market. Just think of housing. There's a ton of supply of housing.
Abundance.
There's not enough demand for to buy it.
You know, but here's the thing. All we keep hearing out of the right is more spending cuts, spending cuts, spending cuts. And no one's been able to explain to me how it is by cutting spending, taking money out of the economy, that somehow that's going to create demand. I'm missing that.
Well, it won't. And it, in fact, will cost jobs and take away demand. And, you know, the evidence has been we've seen as the federal government has pulled back and created deficit plans, the projections for future economic growth have dramatically shrunk. So we see that happening. We also see that happening in Europe, especially Great Britain, where they basically have enacted the Republican plan there. That's cut government spending dramatically. And their growth has fallen to terribly low levels. So it's really that, you know, a very failed idea. And in fact, what's really sad here is that most of the ideas that the Republicans are pushing, so you cut government spending, you cut regulations, which are basically most oftentimes just, you know, protections, so you have safe food, drinking water, et cetera.
Yeah, we don't need that.
And you cut taxes. These were at best, these were, you know, problems, theoretical problems in the economy 20 or 30 years ago. Today, they're clearly not the fundamental problem in the economy. We have tax rates that are at record lows for the past 60 years, lowest point in 60 years. We have surveys of businesses again and again saying that taxes and regulations are not their primary problem. It's lack of demand. So that is, it's really, unfortunately for the Republicans, it's ideology over economics.
Yeah, here's the thing. When President Obama took office, the very first thing I can go back, pull the tape if I have to, the very first thing I said he should have done was to pass some labor law reform to give people the ability to organize. Because our problem is not that there isn't enough wealth out there. The problem is it's distributed wrong, in my opinion. I think too much of it is going to the top and too little of it is going to the people who, actually spend that money and create the demand that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, we've seen, you know, the past 30, 40 years, a dramatic weakening of the middle class as all of the economy's gains have gone to those at the very top. So middle incomes for those in the middle have basically been stagnant, while those at the top have seen record growths. And so now, today, the middle class takes home the smallest share of income, just about, it has in the past 50 or 60 years. So this eviscerating of the middle class, as you said, has taken away a central feature of economic growth, demand, consumer demand. And so, you know, by weakening the middle class, we've undermined the strength of our economy.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Dr. David Matlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. AmericanProgress.org is their website. You can get there from our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Dr. Matlin's name. You know, I watched the debate, and I hate to call the Republican, what those folks are, I hate to call that a presidential debate, but there was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs doing their thing, basically ganging up on workers. And, you know, this kept popping into my head. Do workers in this country have too many rights, and are those rights harming the job creators? Are these people out there, these very wealthy people with their pockets full and their bank accounts full, with a couple of trillion dollars, I'm told, is my right to have a say on the job, is my right to actually have a voice, is that really harming their ability to create jobs and to make a profit?
Of course not. You know, as you said earlier, sadly, Republicans appear to be looking for a scapegoat. You need someone to blame all the problems in the economy on, because their solutions aren't aimed at solving problems. So instead, they need a scapegoat, and the scapegoat has been, sadly, workers' rights. But there's absolutely no evidence. Workers' rights, as you know, unionization is at low point. It's 7% of the private sector is unionized. That's down from about a third in the middle of the past century. If labor rights hurt the economy, then why did we have the record kind of economy when unions were at their strongest? We had fastest economic growth, 4% annual GDP growth. We also had the strongest middle class in the world. We had an economy that was the envy when labor rights were at the strongest and workers had the most rights. Now, when workers are at the absolute weakest point they've been and have very little economic power, are they being blamed for problems? It's really, really sad and scary, and it would be laughable if it's laughable on its face as factual, but it's not laughable in that, as we see, worker, you know, you see in the public sector, scapegoated workers still face the real threats.
Now, you know, here's the thing. I look at this House Bill 2587, what the Republicans, and you got to give Republicans credit. They really have a flair for the names. They really name things, you know, in their best interest. The Protecting Jobs from Government Interference Act, or as I've been calling it, the Protect Boeing from the Law Act. You know, pushing this idea that we're going to, you know, basically neuter the National Labor Relations Board and the National Labor Relations Act and basically undermine what has been 70, 80 years of worth of labor law, and that is the right of workers to collectively bargain and to strike. This really, I got to be honest, is amazing to me.
Yeah, no, the bill would effectively take away collective bargaining rights from workers. That's a dramatic reversal of 70 years of history, over 70 years of history in this country, and would eviscerate unions and workers' ability to come together to bargain for a better job. It's really amazing that this is something they're considering doing. It's, you know, as you said, it's, the bill is ostensibly about Boeing, but its effects are far wider because it undermines in a core right. Companies under the bill, companies would be free to move away from any activity. Basically, there'd be no ability for the NLRB to enforce the law. It would still be against the law for a company to move away if workers exercise their rights. The NLRB just wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
No, they're just pulling their teeth out. And you know what's amazing to me is the retroactivity in the clause. I love that. Because for me, and I've been saying this for the longest time, you've got these companies who have been in control for so long, they've been breaking the law for so long that it's almost commonplace. And to them, you know, their activities are not really breaking the law. It's now that the laws are broken and we need to reform those laws so that my criminal activity today is legal. And we need to do that in a retroactive fashion so that I can't be held responsible for it. And I wish I could get away with that. I wish I could do something that I wasn't held accountable for because I had the power to go have some Republicans in the Senate and in the House push a, you know, a retroactive bill.
Well, you're also hitting at the core element here is that, you know, workers' rights have been trampled on for so long, and the labor rights basically have not been enforced very well. And so now that they're just starting to be enforced, and, you know, in the Boeing case, all we have right now is basically the equivalent of a hearing or a prosecutor saying there's enough evidence to try a case. There's been no ruling, not even a preliminary ruling. And so it's really, you know, just to add to the absurdity of this, to claim, even if you believe that this somehow, the NLRB would somehow harm companies. They've done nothing at this point but simply hear evidence.
And the thing is there's so many other options here. There's so many things that Boeing could do to make this right. But they have this belief that we're absolute and we have absolute power and you government are so weak you can't control us. Last question I've got for you, Dr. Madeline. We've been watching the Republican debates. And again, I hate qualifying that. But you see Ron Paul, you see Michelle Bachmann, you see some of the other folks pining for the days, when there was no minimum wage. I'm curious, your thoughts, would repealing the minimum wage create jobs, and what kind of jobs would those be?
No, it would. Of course, it would not create jobs. But sort of behind that idea is really at the core of the Republican, too many of the Republicans' plan is we can't afford to have decent jobs in this society. But really, it's a false choice, as we know. Good jobs where workers are able to afford decent living in a middle-class lifestyle, that is the engine of economic growth. It's, you know, study after study, just specifically on the minimum wage, we find that raising the minimum wage does not produce employment. It's just, you know, the theoretical economists who and the libertarians who think it's a problem. But we, any of us who operate in the real economy, know that it has tremendous economic benefits. It increases, you know, worker stability. They stay on the job. They have money to spend on goods. It's a tremendous gain for the economy. And it's really sad to think that there is a big chunk of a political party that thinks we no longer can afford basic standards that made us a country with a middle class and the envy of the world.
Yeah, we want to be like Texas, all those minimum wage jobs, and Louisiana actually filing a lawsuit because heaven forbid that we hold guest workers to the minimum wage and make sure that they're paid a reasonable wage. I mean, it's amazing to me all of the attacks on workers, and it's being pushed by one party specifically with the help of the other, in some cases, in my opinion.
It's a sad state of affairs, but it's also really an opportunity because it makes the choices very clear. We can defend workers' rights and rebuild the economy, or we can go back to a time when we had no ability to improve the quality of our jobs and were subject to the whims of employers.
Yep, we're going to go back to the 90s, Dr. Madlin, the 1890s. I appreciate your time. Always great talking to you. Thanks for staying up late for us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Let's play Scamming the System. It's the exciting and richly rewarding game that allows every American to use offshore income shelters and a labyrinth of loopholes to dodge their tax responsibilities. To get in the game, all you need is a few dozen tax lawyers, a flock of lobbyists, and an office in the Cayman Islands. What? You don't have any of those things? Well now, that's your fault, isn't it? But them that's got, including Boeing, eBay, GE, Verizon, and at least a couple of dozen other brand-name players, are in the game big time. A new report by the Institute for Policy Studies reveals that these multi-billion-dollar giants pay far more to their CEOs than they pay in taxes to help fund our nation's crucial needs. In fact, IPS reports that these top executives got their fat paychecks precisely because they were so focused on tax dodging. The corporations analyzed in the report averaged $1.9 billion in profits last year, yet paid zero in federal income taxes. Instead, manipulating the system to get an average of $400 million each in refunds from the IRS. For being such skilled scammers, the chieftains of these corporations raked in an average of $16 million in personal pay last year, way above the average pay for CEOs of other big businesses. Meanwhile, corporations are lobbying Washington to be given a tax cut. They wail that the U.S. corporate tax rate of 35% is higher than any other industrial nation except Japan, and that this burden is hobbling their global competitiveness. BS. As the IPS expose documents, these scammers aren't paying anywhere near 35%, if anything. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop them from gaming us, check out the reform recommendations at ips-dc.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, or you can take the program on the go. Got a question, comment, something you want to email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Well, as reported by Andy Borowitz over at the Borowitz Report, in what the White House hailed as an example of what can be accomplished when we put aside partisan differences, congressional Republicans today responded to President Obama's $447 billion American Jobs Act by allowing the president to create one part-time job. That's right, one part-time job. While the details of what the job would entail remain to be determined, it is expected that the job will be in the lawn work or handing out of flyers industry. At the White House, the president acknowledged that creating one part-time job fell somewhat short of the millions of full-time jobs envisioned in his proposed legislation. He added, though, that this is clearly a step in the right direction. In order to secure funding for that one part-time job, Mr. Obama had to cave on a series of Republican demands, including tax breaks for second homes and third wives. But even as the president and congressional Republicans announced their agreement on the part-time job plan, the proposal came under attacks from GOP presidential frontrunner Rick Perry, who blasted the plan for creating yet another worker who would someday be eligible for Social Security. He said, if we don't cut Social Security now, we won't have enough money to execute our children's children. There you go. A report from Andy Borowitz. And look, the bottom line, jobs. It's pretty simple. The Republicans ran on this platform of jobs, jobs, jobs. Remember the pledge? Do you remember that, Jake? The pledge to America. We pledge that the first three things on our agenda, jobs, jobs, jobs. Have you seen anything?
Absolutely not. I remember Boehner saying again, we've talked about this numerous times, they're gonna zero in like a laser. Well, I guess they misplaced their laser.
Maybe they're going to create that one part-time lawn care job, and maybe that'll be enough. So they can go, see, we created a job. I wonder if they'll pay at least minimum wage. But here's the thing. What's going on in this country for so long is we've been told, and really when I was in high school, they told us the same thing, because we knew the factories were closing. We knew that the trade policies were going in the direction where we were going to move. And Reagan told us. Reagan was very honest. And you got to give him credit. He was true to the ideal, the business-friendly model. He was out there saying, we're going to be a service-based economy. You lived through it, Jake. You remember? We're gonna get rid of that dirty industry. We're gonna get rid of those factory jobs. We're gonna be service-based. You're gonna wash my car. I'll come over and I'll cut your grass, and we'll all be really happy. I'll wash your windows, and you can wash my dog. We'll have this nice service-based economy. I'll serve you dinner. You'll serve me dessert. We'll be really happy. And there are some folks who have bought into this. Well, we can just service each other. And there's an industry that does that, but it's illegal, because we don't want to tax that because of some bizarre morality, but that's a whole other story for another day. But the reality here is, from the beginning of my education, we were told, you got to go to school, you got to get a good job, because if you get that good job, you've got a chance to stay in the middle class and rise. You can be, that ladder will be there for you. Here's the thing. The kids that are coming out of college today, they were told that in the womb. Now, I was told that about high school. You better straighten up, better buck up. Really, it's coming, it's hitting. My kids in the womb, you're going to college, that's it. You're going to have to get a master's degree or a doctorate. You're going to have advanced training just to get the most menial of jobs anymore. And I was reading a a New York Times article that caught my attention. And I forget what the name of it was, something like Generation Limbo or something. And one of the people in there said that, you know, this generation that's getting out of college right now, they're the postponed generation. They're the ones who are staying at home longer. They're the ones who are taking longer to get jobs. They're the ones who are, you know, basically 20, 25, still living at home, still, you know, working crummy part-time jobs with college educations. And the story went in, you know, the article went into, you have all these Ivy League graduates who are waiting tables or working at you know, fast food joints. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, I remember the quote from the one woman who said, you know, you don't expect someone who just spent 4 years in an Ivy League school to be on food stamps. And why that stuck in my head is, you know, I remember Michigan recently just came out and said that if you're in college, you cannot get food stamps anymore. They cut them off because we need the savings. But heaven forbid that these kids should eat. I mean, it seems to me that there is, and, you know, maybe you'll disagree, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, but it seems to me that we're trying to slam that door, close that door for education so that people in the middle income and below, or even the little bit upper middle income, that they don't have that path to education, that they don't have that path to be in the middle class. And what we're now doing is we're separating people based on their ability, not their ability to perform and to learn and to do the right, but their ability to pay. And to me, that is no way you run a country, Jake. Just not.
Well, doesn't that fit their political philosophy, though? It fits right in with the lack of regulation. Going back 50, 100 years, the policies that prior to the development of the middle class. And that, if you think about it, although it's a little bit different, it's a correlating political and, can I say, lifestyle philosophy. That's their idea of what America should be. Unfortunately, what their idea of what America should be, if they have their way, and I'm talking about the extremists now, although some of those people up in the dais with the Republicans, if they get their way, in some areas, they will literally take us back 100 years. We should be afraid of some of these people. And you've expressed that opinion that you don't even want to call it a debate. In some ways, I totally agree with you. Some of the philosophies of these people, when you really analyze it, are frightening. They literally want to take us back 100 years.
You know, you look at this, and I remember in the article they were talking about one kid who had been living with his parents after graduating for quite some time. And the parents finally said, you know, we want to get on with our lives, and started charging him $500 a month for rent to kind of give him the incentive to go, you know what, I know you're not getting a job, there's nothing out there, but it's time to get you out of the nest. So he took a room in some windowless row house somewhere, took a $12 an hour job at some call center, and I remember I'm talking about the calls he was making were for a university to encourage other people to go and get an education, go back to college. And I'm going, here's an Ivy League guy who is got to be bitter, got to be angry, got to be saddled with massive amounts of debt. Here he is making calls for $12 an hour saying, hey, you know, be like me. See, look at the wonderful job I've got. And again, this comes down to our trade policies, our tax policies, and our investment strategies as a nation, all of which the Republicans are constantly on the wrong side of. Constantly. You know who's doing the innovation right now? The Chinese. They're the ones who are spending boatloads of money on research and development. They're the ones who are spending a ton of money on getting people to actually invent stuff. And a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about China, and I got an email that I want to get to. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the jobs bill and your calls. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Precious, and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times, but without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
To the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, if you got a question, comment, something on your mind, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, I look at this whole right-wing agenda, this whole wrecking crew agenda where they seem to think, and I don't know where it comes from, or this idea that we can slash jobs, we can cut teachers, we can get rid of firemen, policemen, and we can basically divest all of our investment in we the people, in our society. And that somehow private corporation, if we give it to them, that they'll come in and they will most certainly pick up the slack. And for me, you know, the reality is, you know, government does things that really aren't profitable. They do things in the interest of society. And we're supposed to, as voters, hold them accountable for that. Private for-profit interests, they do it for one reason. Profit. Society doesn't matter. Democracy doesn't matter. None of that is important. What's important is the bottom line. So if cutting 30,000 workers like Bank of America wants to do is in their bottom line best interest, that is what they're going to do. Doesn't matter what's good for society. And that's what I think, you know, people have got to get through their head. I mean, the Ron Pauls of the world want us to buy into this idea that, well, we're all on our own and there's nothing we can do. And I go back and I listen to his statement talking about, you know, basically let them die. He didn't say that. Now, the people in the audience there, said, you know, well, let them die. We don't care. In fact, we're quite happy about it, cheered quite loudly. But his answer was very interesting. The question was, if a 30-year-old guy doesn't buy health insurance and he comes down with some disease, I forget which they threw out, but he gets this disease and he doesn't have insurance, what should we do? And his answer was, well, you know, he has the freedom to decide what he wants, liberty, blah, 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 blah. So Wolf pushes him. Should we let him die? And the crowd says, yeah, let him die. And Ron Paul says, no, that's where the churches should come in. And he goes into this answer, and part of it I kind of agree with. Get the insurance companies out, get the money grubbers out of it. But he's saying, well, we need the churches to do this. And right in my head, do I really want the churches, which I think is a pretty undemocratic organization? I don't know that I want a theocracy or a series of three theocracies running the country. But he does bring up an interesting point. Maybe we need to get profit out of it. Maybe go back to doing what we used to do before, and that is make sure that all of us have access to healthcare by investing in a community hospital. There's an idea, don't you think? But that's not getting through. What's getting through is more for me and screw you.
sit down with that guy sometime and try to find out exactly what he's talking about. The churches? Okay, now how are they supposed to supply health care? Does he mean provide the money? Does he mean provide hospitals? Catholic churches used to.
Yes.
They used to be. They are still, I think, in Harrisburg.
That's what he pines for.
That's what he's talking about?
Sure. Go back to the
have the Catholic Church provide the cost, provide the hospital, provide the nuns working in there and the employees?
That's his view.
That would be fine if there'd be enough of them, but you know there isn't.
But here's the thing, and this is where, if you're willing to do that, why aren't you willing to have a government up for and by we the people do the exact same thing and have the economy a scale that the right loves to talk about instead of having each little sect and each little church have their little thing and do it in a hodgepodge manner? Why not of for and by we the people ensure that all of us have some minimal level of health security? That if you do have, if you are 30 and you're unfortunate enough and unlucky enough to get some disease, that you're not going to lose your home. You're not going to lose your livelihood. You're not going to be out in the street. Your family's not going to be destitute when you die. I mean, that's the answer they never talk about. Oh, we want freedom. We want an ownership society. So you want us to be free to own nothing and to basically starve to death. That's their idea.
Well, the fallacy in what he's saying, and I think you touched on something good. I remember as a child, we did have community-based hospitals. There's nothing wrong with that. However, those people who don't have health care are only going to go there under extreme circumstances. What about basic health care? You're not going to go to the hospital. You need a doctor. And you need money to pay for that doctor's visit.
Now here
or
again,
you need coverage.
But here's his idea. He wants to go and he wants to unleash, he wants to do it with licensing so that we have no way of finding out who good and bad doctors are. It's a consumer good. Now healthcare is a consumer good. And he wants alternative medicine so we can bring back leeches and stuff like that and bloodletting. Those are great ideas. So that anybody with a bottle of snake oil, no, I mean, this is going back to the day of the snake oil salesman. I will sell you a cure. I mean, you look at all of these supplements that, you know, they claim they cure everything. And you know what? Maybe they, on a certain level, they do aid. Maybe on a placebo level, they help the mind work a little better because you think that it's working. Maybe those are good things, but I don't know that I want that sanctioned as medical care. I think there's got to be a threshold. But to him, it should be an open free market. You should, you know, you're the individual, and you make those choices. And there should be no one who looks over that. And I have a problem with that.
Well, you know, he kind of poo-pooed the reaction of this crowd. And it was his home. He was in his home park when they said, well, let him die, when you were talking about health care. But I've talked to some libertarians.
He was in Florida.
Well, my point is this. The crowd itself agreed with his philosophy.
Yes, they did. Oh, sure they did.
That's what I'm saying. And when they said, the question was asked, well, what do you do with someone who doesn't have health care? Let them die. And some of them said, yes, I've talked to libertarians. And some of them who are decent people, other than their political philosophy. And they say, when you tell them people are dying in this country by the tens of thousands every year because they don't have health care, their answer is, I don't care.
Until it's them. There's the difference. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with Laura Clausen, editor of labor.dailycos.com. We're going to talk about the census number, poverty. We're going to talk about teachers right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Monday, AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka blasted an attempt by House Republicans to strip the National Labor Relations Board of real power to sanction corporations for illegally moving jobs in retaliation for workers exercising union rights. A Republican House bill would prohibit the NLRB from ordering any employer to close, transfer, or relocate employment under any circumstance. It was triggered by an NLRB complaint charging that Boeing illegally intimidated and threatened union workers by citing strikes as part of the reason Boeing built a plant in South Carolina.
This is a sweeping legislation that would gut the National Labor Relations Act and result in serious harmful changes to jobs and workers' rights throughout the country.
Boeing worker and International Association of Machinists member Pat Bertucci.
After negotiations broke down during our last contract and we exercised our right to strike, I was shocked to hear and see that the Boeing company would relocate the 787 line because we struck. When I learned that the NLRB had brought the case forward, I was proud. I was proud to see someone standing up to defend our rights, even against a big company like Boeing. The NLRB is not allowed to pursue this case with the way the law was written. We're all going to be in a lot of trouble, and every American's right to be in a union will be threatened.
Texas labor law professor Julius Gettman says that the Boeing case is just a reasonable effort by the labor board to protect the legal rights of workers.
All they're doing is standing up for the rights of workers, and they're being pilloried as though they were trampling on the Constitution.
Some U.S. senators are trying to end discrimination against the nation's unemployed. Jesse Russell reports.
One job search site made waves last week when it announced it would no longer accept job listings that discriminate against the unemployed. Indeed.com said they made the decision because it fits with the company's philosophy of providing the best job search experience for job seekers. The millions of unemployed in the country have come face to face with a new hurdle during the last 2 years, potential employers who will only hire individuals who are already employed. Currently, it isn't against the law to discriminate against the unemployed, but Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown is co-sponsoring a bill that could change that practice.
I don't want to tell an employer whom to hire, but I also don't think employers should automatically exclude those people that are trying so hard.
The Fair Employment Opportunity Act bars employers and employment agencies from excluding job applicants simply because they're unemployed. The Senate legislation mirrors a bill already introduced in the House.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America, the National Education Association, and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds peaceful. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, I wish there were welfare lines and unemployment lines so that you could actually see the people again. I mean, those were the most dramatic images of the Great Depression, seeing the lines of people waiting to get a loaf of bread. And I remember my grandfather saying, that his mother used to wait all day for a loaf of bread so that the kids could eat. And those are images that I think we will remember for a very long time. But what's happened is we've now put everything on telephones and everything's the internet. We no longer have a place to go and see people, and I think that's a problem, especially when you look at the census numbers that just came out that shows poverty at the highest level since the Reagan administration. That's why I've asked Laura Clausen, editor of the labor.dailycos.com site, to come talk to us about that and some other stuff. Laura, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at these census numbers, poverty on the rise. And we've got a Republican Party who's saying, well, we need to cut those programs. I need to cut, food programs, cut unemployment. I can only assume we can have higher poverty rates.
Exactly. And not just cut unemployment programs and food stamps and all the programs that help people who are already poor, but make more people poor by cutting more jobs.
You know, I saw numbers that showed that the average income in the country had gone up. While the real median income had gone down. So the only thing I can come up with, given that scenario, is that we're not a poor country. It's just that the wealth is being distributed or redistributed in an inefficient way, in my opinion.
More than inefficient. I mean, it's, again, we're seeing more evidence of class warfare from above, that it's just money is being sucked up to the top 1 or 2%, and everyone else is just drifting down, down, down.
So how much worse has the poverty rate gotten? You know, I've seen numbers. I think the number I saw was 15.1% in 2010. That's a pretty major increase from the year before.
Yeah, that's up from 14.3% in 2009, and it's up from 12.5% in 2007. So we're seeing a more than 2.5-point increase in just 3 years.
You know, I look at that and I go, how many people is that? I mean, it's got to be hundreds of thousands more people. The number I saw that you have, over 46 million people living in poverty in this country?
Exactly, and that's nearly 3 million more than more in 2009, the year before. So it's skyrocketing, and the human misery that these numbers are, represent is just staggering.
So when I look at what's going on in Washington and I hear people like Cantor saying, sorry, we've got to cut programs, we got to find, that excess, that waste, fraud, abuse, the stuff that feeds people to help the people who are suffering from the disasters recently. We got to take from one group to give to the other. I ask the question, how many more people are we going to have to put in poverty to make sure that we can take care of when emergencies happen?
Millions, at least. And then you've got Jim DeMint saying that unemployment benefits keep people from looking for jobs because, he claims that he talked to some employer who said that they were looking to hire people, and people were saying, oh, talk to me when my unemployment runs out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, if you're offering someone a job at barely minimum wage, are you surprised when people say, I'm making 3 cents above minimum wage, I might as well,
Exactly.
I mean, it's pure economics.
Yeah, and you have these employers. Now, I don't know that I believe that these employers have had this experience, but even if they have, if you're hearing from multiple people that they would rather be on unemployment than work for you, shouldn't that be a wake-up call to look at yourself and not at them?
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, unemployment insurance, all of those social safety net programs that came out of the Depression, back 3 years ago this week, saved this nation from a complete collapse and really another depression, because we had the elasticity to make sure that demand stayed a little higher, that people were able to put food on the table, people were able to pay their rent or their mortgage for a little bit longer to keep going so the economy didn't completely tank.
Exactly. And, EPI actually said after these poverty numbers came out today that 3.2 million people have been kept out of poverty by unemployment insurance in this time.
That's remarkable. And, you look at the fact that they want to cut that. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, they're going after it. They want to make it harder for people to get unemployment. They want to make it easier for employers to fire people and deny them unemployment. I mean, it's really quite amazing that we haven't seen a working class revolt, that I haven't seen people marching on the capitals, demanding this stuff to stop.
I agree. And I think that what you pointed to a few minutes ago, the fact that there aren't unemployment lines and bread lines out there, is really important, because we don't see it and we don't have these spaces where people connect with other people who are in the same position they are. Everyone's sitting at home, being told by politicians that it's their fault, that they're lazy.
Let's say we follow the Rick Perrys. Let's say we follow the Republicans who want to slash and burn Social Security. Any idea of what would have happened if there was no Social Security here in the country?
Well, actually, EPI also has a number for that. More than 20 million people were kept out of poverty by Social Security in the same time period. So without Social Security and unemployment insurance, you're looking at 23 million people who are living in poverty, which is just, that's a third world country.
In addition to the almost 47 million.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're talking about 70 million, the potential of 70 million people, not to mention all of the people who are going to lose their jobs because the spending of Social Security and unemployment then goes away. So you're talking about a mass constriction of the economy.
Exactly. I mean, Republicans always talk about small businesses, but think about all of the small businesses that go under without this business.
And the other thing that they're going after, You know, and Daryl Issa, one of the guys out in the front of this, let's destroy teachers. Let's go after, firing all those teachers. Because those aren't real jobs, are they? The people who take care of our children and make sure that, they know how to read and do that math thing. They're not important, are they?
No, teachers, the bus drivers who get them to school, we can fire those. We can fire the custodians who keep the schools clean. All of those, they're just government workers sucking at the government kids.
Yeah, well, what's her name? The evil one. What's her name? Oh, yeah, that one. Basically said, they're just government employees and they're not worth anything.
Exactly, which is, kind of surprising when you think about all of the things that they do as far as keeping our water clean, making sure that bridges don't fall down on us, like that bridge that they just had to close between Indiana and Kentucky because it had cracks in it.
Right.
What if there hadn't been government inspectors to look at that?
Well, the free market would have dictated, and, you'd have been on your own. So if you'd have fallen into the water, and it's your own problem, according to Ron Paul. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Laura Claussen, editor over at labor.dailycos.com. We've got a link at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Laura Claussen's name. It'll take you right there. Great, great labor articles. In talking about education, what I've been kind of hammering on lately is there seems to be an abundance of money out there telling me that, this cyber school is better and this charter school is wonderful, and there's all this advertisement telling me how much better the private schools are and how much better the Pennsylvania Cyber, which is a public high school online, I guess. But there's plenty of money to tell me why my public school isn't all that great. Why isn't there that kind of advertising telling me there is? If we got all this money to destroy education, why don't we spend that money in a different way?
Well, because, teachers' unions are just out for themselves, blah, blah, blah.
Ah.
It's another union busting, and not just union busting, but actually taking away a public good, making it so that only a few lucky kids get a good education, and there isn't a quality public school system there for everyone.
Let's talk about Texas for a second, because everybody loves Texas. Here in Pennsylvania, our governor wants to be just like Texas. We got to have a whole bunch of low-paying jobs and make the teachers clean their own classrooms.
Right, it's a Texas miracle.
It's a great idea. In fact, why don't we have them be the cooks for lunch and make them be the crossing guards and the bus drivers and do all of that stuff, do everything but actually teach the kids.
Right, and if the kids come asking for help in those times, the kids get to also clean the classrooms in order to make the teacher have time for them. And that's what's happening in Texas. It's either lay off teachers or make the teachers do the work of all the other people you lay off.
But here's the thing, Laura. That's good job training for those kids. Those are the jobs they're going to have in the future. Cleaning.
If they're lucky.
Washing dogs and cutting grass. That's the economy. We have a service-based economy where basically I'm going to wash your dog and you'll wash my car. And we don't really produce anything anymore, but that's seems to be
exactly. And that's one of the things that's so short-sighted about the way that they're driving down middle-class income in this country. You can only have a service economy for so long. Eventually, someone has to have the money to, be hiring people.
And the part that gets me is that they figured out a way how to make it very, very low-paying so that someone can still benefit and we can still have a class of extremely wealthy people who really don't have to work. They can sit on their yachts and have people like you and I take care of them while the dividend checks roll in. And, they pay less in tax than you and I who take care of them pay ourselves.
Exactly. That's the definition of shared sacrifice these days, that Republicans are paying 2%.
Yeah, I wish I could get into that system. How do you get there? How do you do that?
I think for people like us, lottery. Either win the lottery or maybe marry rich. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I'm happily married with my three kids. I'm not going anywhere. I look at here over in Philadelphia, to change the topic a little bit, Mayor Nutter vetoed a plan for earned sick time. And again, this is something I think really needs to happen across the country. And I guess this Thursday they're going to have a vote to try and override the veto. Probably not going to happen. Be some opportunity there. There has been some success in getting people earned sick time, because I don't know that I really want someone who's hacking all over my food to come to work that day.
Yeah, I don't understand how people can't see this as a public health measure. But, yeah, actually in Seattle, they're just now in the process of passing that. The city council passed paid sick leave for everyone who works at a business that employs more than, I think, 4 people. It means that it still leaves some people out, but it's a big step forward.
And I guess they joined the likes of Washington, D.C., Connecticut, and San Francisco.
Exactly. Those are the only places at this point that have it. But that's more than did a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one of those things that they're going to have to take off. And what I say is, you know, I don't know why we have to do it through the political process. This would be a perfect thing for people to do on their own at their workplace by, collectively bargaining.
That would be a nice thought.
Just a thought.
There's a little bit of firepower aligned against that at this point.
Yeah.
But I don't know why more people don't see it.
Yeah, the same people who brought you the weekend could bring you a sick day as well. Laura Clausen, editor over at labor.dailycos.com. We got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Laura's name. Laura, always great to talk with you. You guys do great work over there. Keep it up.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Let's play Scamming the System. It's the exciting and richly rewarding game that allows every American to use offshore income shelters and a labyrinth of loopholes to dodge their tax responsibilities. To get in the game, all you need is a few dozen tax lawyers, a flock of lobbyists, and an office in the Cayman Islands. What? You don't have any of those things? Well now, that's your fault, isn't it? But them that's got, including Boeing, eBay, GE, Verizon, and at least a couple of dozen other brand-name players, are in the game big time. A new report by the Institute for Policy Studies reveals that these multi-billion dollar giants pay far more to their CEOs than they pay in taxes to help fund our nation's crucial needs. In fact, IPS reports that these top executives got their fat paychecks precisely because they were so focused on tax dodging. The corporations analyzed in the report averaged $1.9 billion in profits last year, yet paid zero in federal income taxes. Instead, manipulating the system to get an average of $400 million each in refunds from the IRS. For being such skilled scammers, the chieftains of these corporations raked in an average of $16 million in personal pay last year, way above the average pay for CEOs of other big businesses. Meanwhile, corporations are lobbying Washington to be given a tax cut. They wail that the U.S. corporate tax rate of 35% is higher than any other industrial nation except Japan, and that this burden is hobbling their global competitiveness. BS. As the IPS expose documents, these scammers aren't paying anywhere near 35%, if anything. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop them from gaming us, check out the reform recommendations at ips-dc.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You know what we're fighting for? Obviously, jobs. Getting this economy back moving again, making sure that workers have the ability to make a decent living, you know, pay the bills, make sure their kids get to school, make sure that their kids' stomachs are full, you know, make sure that if they get sick, they can take a day off, and if they get really sick, they can go to a doctor. You know, just the simple things that in this country, I think we used to kind of take for granted. Just a little bit. But we've got a party hell-bent on politics. They want to win in 2012. They've told you that's the goal. And for the next 14 months, all we're going to talk about is politics. All we're going to see is gridlock, obstruction. There'll be maybe a couple of little things here and there that they'll concede on. But for the most part, they know that they think they've got the president on the ropes. They think if they just stall, delay, and divert attention away, that next November is going to be their jackpot. And I point to House Judiciary Committee member Stephen King. And I love Crazy King. You know, you need a guy who looks as insane as he does, and you need him. You need Crazy King out there who evidently his job's plan is to bring President Obama's uncle, who I guess is the half-brother of President Obama's father, to bring him to Congress to testify. Evidently, Onyango Obama, who is near the uncle, he was arrested in Framingham, Massachusetts on drunk driving charges. And what, you gotta love it, what Steve King says, we have to bring drunken Uncle Omar in front of the House Judiciary Committee, drill down into this and tell America what's going on. He was driving drunk. It happens. People do it. I don't know that the president sanctioned his drunk driving. I would doubt that there's an executive order for you to drill down to, Steve. But what it is, again, it's and I've already diverted probably a minute and a half away from talking about jobs to talk about how crazy King is.
Well, there could be a trade-off, right?
The Democrats could insist on an investigation into the drinking episode of the vice president when he was the great white hunter. Do you think that'll happen?
You mean the former vice president?
Former vice president.
Dick Cheney.
On one of his...
when he shot his friend
hunting,
in the face.
His hunting exhibition, so we call it.
You know you're in a position of power when you shoot somebody in the face and they apologize to you.
And the cops don't show up for 2 days.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story. But when you shoot somebody in the face and they apologize that you didn't get the big quail for having their face in the way, you know you're in a position of power. Just, wow, nuts. But there you go, Crazy King. Hey, we need that diversion. You know, we need to get away from what's the real problem is. And the real problem is they don't have any clue. No clue, no plan, no idea, no vision. All it's about is we want to win. That's it. We want to win. We won't know what to do when we win, but we want to win. Oh, I know what they'll do, what they've done in the past. More tax cuts for rich people, more deregulation so that we drink brown water and breathe air you've got to cut with a knife. And, of course, you know, more outsourcing. And tax breaks to outsource. You know, beautiful. More tax breaks for big corporations. You know, it'll be wonderful. This will be the neocon paradise. Because I'm telling you right now, and I know my far-left friends are going to be very angry at me. If Obama loses next November, because I'm predicting the Democrats will lose the Senate, we may see the end of this country as we know it, because the next president will have the opportunity, I believe, to appoint one, possibly two Supreme Court justices. And if a radical right-wing president, it doesn't matter, Snow White or any of the seven dwarfs, they're all going to be just as crazy, puts another Sam Alito or another John Roberts or another Scalia or another Thomas on the court, this country is... Well, we are absolutely a corporatocracy. It is done. This won't even be a fascist nation. This will be a corporatocracy. Corporations will run government. There'll be no partnership. There'll be no melding of corporations and government. There will be corporate control. Mark my words. And you look at the part of that today here in Pennsylvania, judge here in Harrisburg ruled that the mandate on the Affordable Care Act, he is saying here unconstitutional. Judge Christopher Connor right here said, well, you know, it's unconstitutional because it isn't an extension of the Commerce Clause. He said, you know, there's big trouble. You know, we've got a crisis, no doubt. But we're not going to let this go through. And, of course, Connor was appointed by who? Yeah, that's right. George W. Bush back in 2002. And what's interesting, turns out, Connor was a big GOP donor. A lot of money going into the coffers. It's reported he's been giving tens of thousands of dollars to the GOP, especially between the years of 97 and 2000. He maxed out his contributions to Bush and, of course, to Rick Santorum. So, as I've been saying, this health care bill is going to end up squarely at the foot of the Supreme Court. Now, imagine. It may take another year, may take two. Imagine what happens if Rick Perry or Mitt Romney or one of Snow White or the other seven dwarfs becomes president. And they have the ability to appoint one more Supreme Court justice or two more. Healthcare is dead in this country. Bye-bye. And, you know, some of the news I've been seeing, we're up close to 50 million uninsured right now. And that's not the people that government's insuring. Those are uninsured. So Rick Santorum, you know, in bringing him up, he was on the stump today. And you know what he said? People are living too long. Social Security's got problems because people are living too long. So we need to make that age, we need to push it off, make people retire older. Because people are living too long. So basically the theory is, and this was the Alan Simpson frame, if you remember, they want to reform Social Security so it worked like it used to. You know, the average age was, you know, you died around 60 or 57, I forget what he said. So we made the retirement age 65. So you were dead several years before you could collect it. You know, reform. So it worked like it used to. So that's kind of the frame. And the idea is he's saying, well, you know, the average people are going to live to 85, so we need to push that off later. Basically saying that we want people to live shorter lives. Because understand, Jake, if you had to work lifting 100-pound bags of cocoa or whatever it is you did making chocolate, you think you could do that at 70?
No. And that's one thing that the people like Santorum never understood. Your body is your body. You know, we haven't evolved as a human race to where, you know, the facts of life are different. Just because he wants to change the law. The truth is, many people go around 60, their body is saying, you know what? You know what, Sally or John? You need to retire because your body can't, especially in physical jobs, your body can't do it anymore.
So
it's a simple fact of life.
You know, Santorum's out there saying, well, I'm 9 years away from retirement. I don't feel like I should be retiring. Yeah, because you've never done an honest day's work in your life. I doubt he's ever got his hands dirty.
We can't all be in Congress and stay till, oh, I don't know, like some of them, till literally 90. And there
Strong
were a few.
Furman.
There were a few.
I mean, at the end of this, look, you know, there are people who bust their behinds. You cannot work to 70 years old. You can't work to 75 years old humping boxes or swinging a hammer.
We all know this is about money. This is about catering to the special interests. They want to privatize by saying, look, the system doesn't work. The truth is, and we talked about it 1,000 times in this show, can easily be fixed if you have the political will.
And we obviously do not yet. Hopefully we will. But here's the thing. With all of this insanity that's going on, this group called the Third Way, they're a moderate think tank. Third Way. Yeah, I'll give you a Third Way. Their study has come out and said that they find that the people who in 2009 who supported Obama in 2008, but then in 2010 switched and voted for Republicans, they're saying that, 34% of them are saying that they're going to vote for Obama today. And 78% of those who didn't vote for at all in 2010, people that they're calling droppers, 78% of them say that, you know, they approve of what Obama's doing, and 73% of those are saying they would vote for Obama in 2012. That's good information for him. That means that those people who were really disenfranchised, who really, you know, kind of just took a step back in 2010, have looked at what happened and have said, you know what, maybe we need to undo what happened in 2010. So it's an interesting... it's an interesting poll. I hope they follow this up. But, you know, the Third Way, I mean, you got to love that. Let's focus on stuff that from each side that doesn't work and focus on that. That seems to be the Third Way. Interesting poll. So we're going to take a quick break right back after this with Sari Stevens, Executive Director of Planned Parenthood, Pennsylvania. Back after this. The
Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go there and download our podcast. And if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take your program on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So if you saw the big debate last night with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Snow White went after Dopey, Rick Perry, over his signing an executive order mandating that all girls 12 years and older have to have, or 12 years have to have this HPV vaccination. Now, he went about it probably in a dumb way with the executive order, probably should have gone through the legislature. They eventually overturned his executive order. But Michelle Bachmann said something curious the next morning on one of the morning talk shows that, you know, kind of grabbed my attention.
Well, I will tell you that I had a mother last night come up to me here in Tampa, Florida, after the debate. She told me that her little daughter took that vaccine, that injection, and she suffered from mental retardation thereafter. It can have very dangerous side effects.
And I listen to that and I go, is this the frame that the right wants to take? And all I keep hearing from the wrecking ball right is this attack on women, this attack on their rights. And I'm surprised, maybe I shouldn't be surprised at Michelle Bachmann. But that's why I've asked Sari Stevens, Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Pennsylvania, to come talk to us a little bit about the statement and what I think is really the attack on women overall. Sari, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this. First, I guess the first thing we should probably clear up, what is this HPV?
It's human papillomavirus, and it leads to cervical cancer.
And is there a way we can, with this vaccination, would this help prevent, would this help stave off? What's the vaccination for?
It's a vaccination for cancer. It's the first and only vaccination from a common form of cancer.
So basically by doing this, you know, as much as you may not like Perry, by doing this, it may have saved some lives.
4,000 women die of cervical cancer a year, and it's a completely preventable cancer.
So have you heard any allegations, any charges that this vaccine causes children to become retarded?
Never. Never, ever. First time.
I mean, I hate to say it that way, but you know, this is what Michelle Bachmann is now pushing, that and this is a very dangerous frame, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, this vaccine is supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics, not a right-wing fringe group.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I've got a 9-year-old daughter, and I've got a soon-to-be 3-year-old. At some point down the line, I'm going to have to make the decision, do they get this? And if I'm hearing someone like Michelle Bachmann saying, well, it's dangerous, and it may cause retardation, someone may think twice about it.
Well, obviously, a decision about vaccination is always up to the parents. And even in Texas, when the executive order was signed, there was a parental opt-out, as there should be. But of course, it's up to the parents. And I think any average American parent would want their child to have the option and give their child the option to be vaccinated against a very common form of cancer. It's not rocket science.
Yeah. Are you surprised that she would take a frame like that and push that? Or do you think it was just reactionary and not really thought about what she was saying?
I'm not sure that I'm ever surprised at something Michelle Bachmann says, but, she had to hook onto something, and I think that's the frame she's going in.
But overall, you know, as I've been watching this whole thing unfold, you look here in Pennsylvania as the Republicans have taken charge, and in other states, one could argue, and I'm one who does, that women's rights, especially the reproductive rights, have been under attack.
Yeah, it's funny. Before we got on the call, I was doing some voter work and looking at the registration numbers, and women in Pennsylvania are registered to vote 8 points higher than men, and you have to know that they're paying attention to the laws that are being enacted to restrict their reproductive and their health care rights.
Yeah,
it's a dangerous road.
Yeah, I look at this, and I personally, I don't think that, I want people like Michelle Bachmann making those decisions, or Rick Perry for that matter. But to be honest, I see these attacks as something to defund and take away access. And when you're talking about that, that's what's dangerous to me, and that's what's scary. That, maybe I do want to have my daughters vaccinated. Maybe I want them to have, some health care, opportunities. They're taking the funding away from that.
Well, right. And it's completely out of the mainstream. I mean, we have shown, polls have shown repeatedly that voters, and Republican voters in particular, want the government out of their health care decisions. So this trend of restricting health care rights, restricting reproductive health care rights, making abortion less accessible, and moving on the track of making it abortion illegal and unsafe is not where the general public wants to go.
Yeah, I agree. But here's the thing. When you're talking about defunding it, and I look at what's going on to Planned Parenthood across the country, this idea that, we can strip the funding out of it and thus make them go away, because I think it was John Kyle, if I'm not mistaken, who said 98% of the stuff that you guys do is abortion, which is ridiculous, but I'm not surprised it would come out of his mouth.
Well, I think it's the most drastic twisting of a fact I've ever heard. 97% of our services are basic gynecological services that every woman receives, like a pap smear, breast cancer screening, birth control pills and education, STD screening, and things like detection of cervical cancer. This is mainstream healthcare, and the far right is completely off base in making it non-accessible to American women.
Yeah, here in the state of Pennsylvania, what's going on? I know there was some talk, there was some a push at one point to defund Planned Parenthood. What's the status?
In Pennsylvania, we're currently engaged in fighting the most outrageous attack on abortion rights we've ever seen in the state. We're following the path of Texas. Actually, our bill is more extreme than Texas, on par with Kansas and Mississippi. And it would essentially regulate abortion facilities like small hospitals, and none can comply. And there's not a single medical group that supports the bill. The only groups in support are groups that want to see abortion eradicated and gone from our society.
Wow, those are two states that I really want to emulate, Mississippi mm-hmm. and Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Worse than Texas. Worse than Rick Perry State.
I'm without words.
And we're Pennsylvania. I mean, it's mind-blowing to really think that Pennsylvania, that this, a bastion of the Northeast. We're a more conservative northeastern state, but we are not a state to march in the footsteps of Kansas and Mississippi.
That's scary, scary stuff. And, you know, for me, I got to be honest. I'm somebody who grew up, I'm not in favor of abortions. I wish they didn't have to exist. But I'm pro-safety. I hope my daughters never get into a position where it comes up. But if it does, I want them to be safe. And I think that's what the majority of America is. I don't think there are that many people who are, the ones who are going to strap bombs to themselves and blow things up at abortion clinics.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. I mean, Rick, it really, really is. I can't emphasize enough what dangerous territory we're headed into. 37,000 women have safe legal abortions in Pennsylvania each year on average. There's a 0.01% complication rate. And if this bill passes, which we expect it will this fall, if we're not successful in defeating it, it'll go into law next spring, and you tell me where those women are going to go.
It's scary, scary stuff. And what you brought up a second ago, you were talking about the fact that you do contraception. And it's one of the things that I think the right is really kind of latched onto, and they want to take us back, before the days of Griswold, so that they can basically control women's lives completely.
Well, right. I mean, this debate was not about abortion. This debate was about belittling a vaccine that prevents cancer. And you cannot go further to the right, and further on the extreme right than that approach.
I listen, and the reason I bring that up is I listen to Rick Perry talk about abstinence-only education. And this is where the right, I think, goes completely wrong. He was talking about in Texas how abstinence-only education, it just plain works. We know it works. Even though they have, I think, one of the top two or three highest teen pregnancy rates in the country, he's stuck on it. It works. We know it works. Worked in my life. And just kind of, again, head in the sand.
Well, and that's great. I mean, abstinence does work for some people. And abstinence is a huge component of comprehensive sex education. But we're not going to, let's be honest. People have sex. And if we don't teach them how to protect themselves, then we all have our heads in the sand.
Well, again, I appreciate the work you guys do there. At Planned Parenthood. You do good work. Sarah Stevens, Executive Director, Planned Parenthood, Pennsylvania. I appreciate your time. Thanks for the update, and we'd like to have you back again soon.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
All righty. Going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, something on your mind? Back after this.
Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and you're in the
control. Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair
Service. Hey there, fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
You know, we could be the Texas of the Northeast. Wow, there's something to aspire to. The largest creation of minimum wage jobs in the country. Yeah. A right-to-work state, wonderful state. You know, we rich people, we can pocket the money and get those poor Mexicans to come in and work, do the work for us. Get good American values. Scary, scary stuff. Remember talking about Michelle Bachmann, who, you know, she's taking the idea that we need to drill, baby, drill. Taking it to the next step. You know, we need to, wherever there's energy, we need to drill and drill now. Well, she happened to say, and we talked about this, that we need to drill in the Florida Everglades. One of her grand ideas. You know, there's natural gas there. So we need to get into that. Wherever it's at, we're going to go get it. Tap right into it. Well, gotta love when, I go back to what Newt Gingrich said at the last, not this debate, but the one prior. He said, you know, I don't want you guys to get Republicans fighting Republicans. It's not like we're actually going to debate. We don't want Republicans fighting each other. Here's an issue we're maybe going to teach wits going at it. She said she's going to, if she's president, allow drilling in the Everglades. Representative Alan West, extreme, way out teach wit. He has said absolutely off limits, not going to happen, done. I'm going to straighten her out, about that. So I guess drill baby drill works, just not in my backyard. According to our T-Twizzler, Alan West. I mean, it's amazing. We can drill everywhere. Drill, 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 but not here. There you go. Anyway, the whole privatization thing, you know, as I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, the money that's going into diverting, making sure that we can split up public education, we can divert it here, charter schools, PA Cyber, K-12.org, all this money coming in to tell us that we need to destroy the public system that we have. I look at this story from Portland, Oregon, as another one of those, you know, really, did they do this? Evidently, one parent had this great idea. You know, my kid learns through hip-hop music, so we're gonna start a hip-hop charter school. Gonna be real cool and have haircuts and, you know, matching jackets and shoes and, you know, all that stuff. It was called the Real Prep Charter Academy. And the idea was he was going to have a recording center and he was going to do kind of an arts in the hip hop culture, which I guess, you know, not a bad idea if that's how kids learn and you can figure out how to rap to math. Okay, I'm with it. I'm down with the hip hop charter school, if you will. But they only got 48 people to sign up of the 160 that they had thought of. So the money that they had raised, they evidently had spent. The person who started it for himself took $68,000. Because, you know, I got to get paid, got to get mines. They then hired another person to design the hip-hop curriculum, paid him $79,000. And by the time they got around, after paying the founder's salary, after paying the guy to put, you know, the other stuff, after they got a whole bunch of free stuff, they didn't have any money to buy things like, chairs. They didn't have any money left to buy, books. There was nothing left over to, you know, make sure that there was a chalkboard. Nothing. And I look at this and I go, you know, it may have been a good idea on paper, but you gave a whole bunch of government money, a whole bunch of taxpayer dollars that was supposed to go to education, that was supposed to educate these kids to someone who's, hey, let's start a hip-hop charter school.
I guess my question is, anybody going to be held responsible?
Well, money's gone. There's some recording equipment. Can you hock that? You know, I guess there's a
misuse of government funds.
Well, we built it and they did not come.
I'm looking for something. I guess that would have to be stipulated in the law, but you would think something like this would just be, it would, those people would be held responsible.
Yeah, but here again, to me, this is another one of those moments where you go, why did we divert those funds? If you wanted to have a program, you could do that within the confines of the public school system to be able to move that around. Why did you then go and have to start an entire new entity? Why are we insistent on reinventing the wheel? Why are we insistent on destroying a system that has worked? If there's a problem, let's fix it. Let's roll up our sleeves like we've been doing for generations and fix our problems. Why is it that all this money is being diverted away from the core of what we need, which is every kid to have the best quality education so that they can compete in the 21st century for the jobs that increasingly are going overseas? And why is that? Because there's profit to be made in it. There's, you know, $68,000 for the guy who thought it up. There's another $79,000 for the guy who designed the curriculum in his spare time. Neither of which are professionals at educating anyone. So to me, it's another one of these schemes. Then you put a little coin in somebody's pocket, but who hurts? The taxpayers and, of course, the students. And what we've heard from the Republicans for a generation now is this idea that anything government is bad. You know, we've had it hammered into our heads. Anything government bad, private good. You know, it's almost like, you know, you know, the dog. You know, it's almost like the Pavlovian dog. You're burnt every time you say something with government. And anytime you say good, private good, you got to treat. And I look at this study that was conducted by the Project on Government Oversight. They found that in 33 of 35 occupations within the government paid billions of dollars more than they would have to private contractors than they would have had the folks working for the government had done the jobs themselves. Now I remember being in Wisconsin. I think I've talked about this a couple of times. I went and I got my oil changed, and the guy in front of me, as it turned out, was a government worker, worked for the state of Wisconsin. And he was telling the guy behind the counter that he was retiring from the state because everything was just getting crazy. His job was being outsourced. Everything was just going nuts. And he wanted to get away from it. Too much abuse from the politicians, too much headache. But his job was being privatized to a company who was going to then contract with the state to do his exact job. So he was going to retire, he was going to collect his pension, and then he was going to go work for that private for-profit company making twice the salary. Twice. And the guy behind the counter, when this gentleman left, was angry. Not about the salary increase being twice of what it cost this guy to do it as a public worker, but that this guy was collecting a pension. And it really tells me how far off the ball our eyes have gotten. Sure, he got his pension, but for me, the angering part, the thing that ticked me off is now you're spending twice as many taxpayer dollars to do the same job that this guy was willing to do for half. But we've had that just pounded in our head. And in fact, the study found that contractors charge the federal government more than twice the amount that it pays federal workers. More than twice. So, you know, this guy that I was behind in line, that's just part of the game. We're going to pay these folks, these private contractors, a boatload of money. Now, that's just what he earned. That's not what the company took for themselves. Now, what they're saying is, what this study says is, the government spends about $320 billion a year on contracts for various services. And they, you know, they took a look at a bunch of those contracts. I think 33 out of 35, man. So we're attacking government workers. The Republicans are going headlong into attacking them. Obama's freezing their pay. And we're outsourcing the work, and it's costing us more. We're probably getting shoddy work, and it's costing us more. And here's the thing. I seem to remember, maybe you'll remember, but I seem to remember someone predicting just that. Who could that have been? Oh, yeah, me. The reality is I've been saying this for the longest time. You cannot continue to outsource and expect your costs to go down, which is what the Republicans are telling us. If we destroy government, if we destroy our infrastructure, a private corporation will do it cheaper for us. No. Now, what you had for the longest time, you had the Heritage Foundation out there running around, the Koch brother founded, Paul Weyrich founded Heritage Foundation, saying that federal employees earn 22% more an hour in wages than people in the private sector. One, I would ask if that includes salary and benefits, because it really shows me how little benefits private sector workers get. But the Heritage study also found that when you adjusted it for private sector folks, you could adjust that wage and freeze, because Obama bought into freezing those federal workers' pay. If you could just do that, bring that down 22% for the federal workers, cut their pay, that you'd save $47 billion this year. So there was waste, fraud, and abuse there. We could go after those workers and steal wages back like they do in the private sector. And that is the Heritage way. So, I look at this study, and it pretty much lays it out for me. In fact, in computer engineering services, which they pay federal contractors a boatload of money, they spent, I guess, what was it, last year, almost $269,000 per year. The government worker who used to do that job, they would have made $136,000, almost twice. Hiring a contractor to do human resource management, the federal government paid contractors over $228,000. If they would have had somebody in-house, it would have cost $111,000, more than half. And you look at this and you go, at some point, don't we have to wake up? Don't we have to call every time some idiot says, well, government bad, private corporation good? Don't we have to smack them and say, stupid, wake up? The facts are what they are. Or am I missing something here? Because I got to be honest, Jake, this is something we've known for the longest time.
I looked at some numbers several times, and the truth is, and you showed some good examples, the higher the skill level, the higher the education level, the greater the difference in pay between private sector and public sector. And it's amazing. And we have some friends who are, intelligent people who work for the state. It's amazing that the state gets as many good people as it does, because you can make a lot more in the private sector, without question.
But, they get pensions. Yeah, I love that argument. They get pensions. Yeah, that's part of their wage. Sorry, I hate to burst your bubble. That's deferred compensation. But that's something that, we don't talk enough about. But to me, this is an important frame to be busted. And I've asked, and I continue to ask, and I will ask every day that I'm on the air until someone shuts me up. Show me a privatization scheme that has worked. Every time I see something that used to be ours, used to be the people's, used to belong to we, the people of this country, once we've handed it over to for-profit interests, we, one, no longer get that service as we did, and there's going to be a profit motive. Somebody's pulling resource out of that to enrich themselves. It's like our roads. We want to privatize turnpikes, and we want to privatize our bridges. It seems dumb to me. We invest in that stuff ourselves so that we have the use of it. But, there's no profit in that. How do we have a billionaire class if we have things that we as a nation decide we want to have in common? Just what it is, I guess. And, as I look down the road, even the president, this jobs plan, the investment bank that they want to set up, more public-private partnerships. What I say we should be doing ourselves. We are now begging private corporations and enticing them with tax incentives to help us with. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, back after this.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Monday, AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka blasted an attempt by House Republicans to strip the National Labor Relations Board of real power to sanction corporations for illegally moving jobs in retaliation for workers exercising union rights. A Republican House bill would prohibit the NLRB from ordering any employer to close, transfer, or relocate employment under any circumstance. It was triggered by an NLRB complaint charging that Boeing illegally intimidated and threatened union workers by citing strikes as part of the reason Boeing built a plant in South Carolina.
This is a sweeping legislation that would gut the National Labor Relations Act and result in serious harmful changes to jobs and workers' rights throughout the country.
Boeing worker and International Association of Machinists member Pat Bertucci.
After negotiations broke down during our last contract and we exercised our right to strike, I was shocked to hear and see that the Boeing company would relocate the 787 line because we struck. When I learned that the NLRB had brought the case forward, I was proud. I was proud to see someone standing up to defend our rights, even against a big company like Boeing. The NLRB has not allowed us to pursue this case with the way the law was written. We're all going to be in a lot of trouble, and every American's right to be in a union will be threatened.
Texas labor law professor Julius Getman says that the Boeing case is just a reasonable effort by the labor board to protect the legal rights of workers.
All they're doing is standing up for the rights of workers, and they're being pilloried as though they were trampling on the Constitution.
Some U.S. senators are trying to end discrimination against the nation's unemployed. Jesse Russell reports.
One job search site made waves last week when it announced it would no longer accept job listings that discriminate against the unemployed. Indeed.com said they made the decision because it fits with the company's philosophy of providing the best job search experience for job seekers. The millions of unemployed in the country have come face to face with a new hurdle during the last 2 years, potential employers who will only hire individuals who are already employed. Currently, it isn't against the law to discriminate against the unemployed, but Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown is co-sponsoring a bill that could change that practice.
I don't want to tell an employer whom to hire, but I also don't think employers should automatically exclude those people that are trying so hard.
The Fair Employment Opportunity Act bars employers and employment agencies from excluding job applicants simply because they're unemployed. The Senate legislation mirrors a bill already introduced in the House.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America, the National Education Association, and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of our program, you can get the podcast there at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and you can take the program anywhere that you may go. I got an email this afternoon. Rick, I was listening to the podcast this morning and heard the call about China moving into the U.S. I, too, have heard similar stories. China scares the hell out of me because we seem to be in such deep debt with them. Is there any way out? And if so, what are we waiting for? And why are we not doing it? Keep up the great work. I'm telling all my friends to tune in. Bill, just Bill. Thanks, Bill. And again, you can miss any portion of the program. Do like Bill does. Download the podcast. Take it with you. You know, the thing, last night the guy called in because he's worried that China is setting up little cities in the U.S., and there's talk of this. What's going on is, you know, the Chinese, their corporations are coming in and looking at taking over industrial areas. They're looking up setting up, you know, big trade zones. You know, these Chinese national companies, they're doing smart things, very smart business things for them. They're buying up cheap land, and they're buying up cheap factories, and they're capitalizing on them. And they're spending money. So, you know, they have the opportunity. You know, they're making basically the company town all over again. And they're not taking over cities, but what they're using is they're using our private property rights against us. And what's interesting is, and for the most part, we seem to see politicians and people in those communities all in favor of, yeah, come on in, yeah, bring those jobs in, with the thought that, you know, the Chinese are going to be creating jobs here. And really, I guess it's just not the Chinese who are doing this. It's all corporate forms, which is why corporate personhood is such a central theme to the radical right. So what's going on is what we're seeing is we're seeing the government setting up these free trade zones. And I guess there are like, you know, over 250 of them across the country. And we're giving them some special customs treatment so that they can, you know, they can fly into their little area. And I guess the worry and the conspiracy comes in that the Chinese are going to try and bring in nukes. And I understand that. But, you know, we're in such a bad way. And the investment in manufacturing in this country is just not happening by U.S. corporations because they're investing in China. It's interesting to me that the Chinese are now saying, hey, the U.S. is a good place because they got exploitable labor and cheap land, and we don't have to ship all that stuff back. So, I mean, stop and think about this for a second. We've allowed U.S. companies to move over to China, ship their goods back. We buy those cheap goods. The money goes back to China. China has all this money, all these reserves and all this cash, and they go, well, what are we going to do with it? Well, it's got to come back here since the dollar is the reserve currency, so they're buying up our land. And I've been talking about this for the longest time. Now, should you worry about them taking over our sovereignty? I don't know about that, but you should be concerned that we're losing our manufacturing base, and we're getting our hats handed to us in deficits. Trade deficits. And it's not something that we heard anything about during the whole big debt ceiling debate. In fact, I don't think I heard anyone bring up the trade deficit. So the question then becomes, how do we reinvigorate manufacturing? How do we get people to invest here in the U.S. that aren't the communist Chinese? That's the million-dollar question, and that's what Obama's struggling with. I mean, if you look at the fact on the jobs front, since China, and you want to be afraid of China because they're eating our lunch, and we've basically just handed it to them. So here, have some lunch. Now, we won't fight you over it. Please take it. We've lost an average of 50,000 manufacturing jobs each and every month since they entered the WTO in 2001. 50,000 a month. We've lost more than 2.5 million jobs since 2001. We've lost 50,000 factories. Stop and think about the manufacturing capacity that we just lost. You know, back in 1970, a quarter of all jobs in this country were making things. 25% of all jobs were manufacturing. Today, it's down to just under 9%. Stop and think about all of that creative wealth, all of that value-added wealth, just gone. And it's not that the Chinese beat us. It's that we gave it to them. Here, take it. Please, enrich our investor class. Stop and think about 2010. We spent $365 billion more on goods and services than the Chinese spent with us. That's your deficit. Since 2005, we have bought well over $1 trillion more products that they've produced than we have. I mean, that is just, well, it's outrageous. But it's our policy. And I've hit on this before. Back in 1985, you know what our trade deficit with China was? $6 million. So in the last 26 years, it has gone from $6 million in an entire year to this past July being almost $45 billion. So in 1 year, $6 million back in 85. 1 month this year, almost $45 billion. And you wonder why we're having economic problems? The fact that the Chinese produce 11 times as much steel as we produce, and you wonder why we're having economic problems? The fact that the Chinese are investing heavily in alternative energies, wind, solar, geothermal. They're the number one producer in the world of wind and solar power. Why? Because they're investing in it. In fact, their solar production was 50 times larger in 2010 than it was in 2005. They're spending money. They're investing. And for those of you who love Christmas, 85% of those beautiful Christmas trees, those artificial things, made in China. So even our holidays are now Chinese. All the toys under all the presents under the tree itself, all of the lights, all of the tinsel, all of the bulbs, the little star on top, all made in China. And you wonder why we're having a problem in this country. You wonder why we don't have any jobs? I mean, stop and think about it for a second. And when you look at what we were told, and we've been told this over and over again, get a good job, computer jobs, go get an IT job, good paying job. We don't do it anymore. In fact, you know, we've got a trade deficit with what they call advanced technology products, meaning that thing we were supposed to build and sell the rest of the world, we're actually losing there. By huge numbers. In 2010, we had a trade deficit of $82 billion in tech products. You know what our number one export is? Our number one export to China? Scrap and trash. We send them all of our garbage. You know what they send us? Their number one export? Computer equipment. So now we live in the information technology world. We live in a computer military world where everything is computerized. You know, we can't have a battlefield without a computer, and yet we're buying all our computers from the Chinese? Does that make sense to anyone? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And what scares me is you look at the reality. There have been a couple of studies on this that are saying that, you know, in the next year, the Chinese are going to be the world leader in patents, which means that there is where the innovation has happened. That American spirit, that entrepreneurial spirit that the right loves to talk about, it's being funded by the Chinese government. Because we used to fund people to come up with ideas. We used to fund people who had smart ideas. We don't seem to do that anymore. And how many people remember when the U.S. auto industry was the envy of the world? You know, in 2010, we had a trade deficit of $110 billion in automobiles, trucks, and auto parts. $110 billion deficit. Now, what would happen? We brought those jobs back. What would happen if we said, you know what? We're going to produce those products. We're going to put our people back to work. We're going to invest in our country. And all we get from the Republicans, man, is... No, let's talk about bringing Obama's uncle in for questioning. Just plain dumb. I mean, you remember, Jake, you remember when the auto industry was powerful in this country and it was the envy of the world? Can you imagine $110 billion trade deficit?
Well, the truth is, I mean, let's bring it closer to home. Other than Michigan, probably Pennsylvania has suffered a greater job loss. I can remember during the 2008 election, I can remember one of the candidates running for U.S. Senate saying, look, or excuse me, that was 2010, the Democratic nominee said, in 10 years, Pennsylvania's lost 70% of their industrial manufacturing base in a short 10-year span. 70%. That's incredible if you think about it.
And the thing that bothers me, and look, I don't mind if you get into a fight and you lose. You know, it happens. But we didn't fight. You know, I don't mind losing when you put up a fight. But when you just say, okay, go ahead, which is what we've done. We've allowed Wall Street, we've allowed the investor class, who were told that we have to keep giving them more. We have to double down on bad policy. We have to double down on tax breaks for the wealthy, because maybe at some point they're going to get wealthy enough, the pockets will be full, and they will overflow, which I'm telling you is never going to happen. The greed at the top is never going to be satisfied. Their appetite will never, never cease. Understand that. But we didn't fight this. We said, yeah, go ahead, because we're going to get cheap goods. And we can go to Walmart, we can buy our cart full of cheap plastic crap from China, and Walmart can keep pushing those jobs out of the country because we need lower prices. They keep pushing down those wages, and look where we are now. We're, mark my words, Walmart's in trouble, and they know they're in trouble. Because the dollar stores are now where people have to shop. They can't even afford to go to Walmart. That's how bad this economy is getting. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Let's play Scanning the System. It's the exciting and richly rewarding game that allows every American to use offshore income shelters and a labyrinth of loopholes to dodge their tax responsibilities. To get in the game, all you need is a few dozen tax lawyers, a flock of lobbyists, and an office in the Cayman Islands. What? You don't have any of those things? Well now, that's your fault, isn't it? But them that's got, including Boeing, eBay, GE, Verizon, and at least a couple of dozen other brand-name players, are in the game big time. A new report by the Institute for Policy Studies reveals that these multi-billion dollar giants pay far more to their CEOs than they pay in taxes to help fund our nation's crucial needs. In fact, IPS reports that these top executives got their fat paychecks precisely because they were so focused on tax dodging. Corporations analyzed in the report averaged $1.9 billion in profits last year, yet paid zero in federal income taxes, instead manipulating the system to get an average of $400 million each in refunds from the IRS. For being such skilled scammers, the chieftains of these corporations raked in an average of $16 million in personal pay last year, way above the average pay for CEOs of other big businesses. Meanwhile, corporations are lobbying Washington to be given a tax cut. They wail that the U.S. corporate tax rate of 35% is higher than any other industrial nation except Japan, and that this burden is hobbling their global competitiveness. BS. As the IPS expose documents, these scammers aren't paying anywhere near 35%, if anything. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop them from gaming us, check out the reform recommendations at ips-dc.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Back to the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
When those Walmart guys hear the word unionize, they go completely insane. They'll find out who, and boy, if it's you, you're in for a world of pain. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions.
And welcome back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Just to follow up on this, just let's kind of wrap it up. You know, what's going on, and the first story I think that people caught on to with China coming and taking over is in Idaho. They have bought some, they were looking at some land to make an industrial park. This National Machine Corporation that the Chinese government owns a majority in, they want to start manufacturing stuff. And what they want to do in their complex is have the supply chain all right there. They want to have everything contained, all of their own services, all of their own goods. And look, it's not going to create American jobs, even though the politicians think, oh, gee, we're going to bring jobs. It's not. And, you know, there's some bizarre twists in there. They're going to bring in some Chinese nationals who are going to be able to live on that complex. Understand that. There's some real problems here and the things we've really got to be looking at. But the politicians in Idaho seem to be all in favor of it because they think it's going to create jobs and you're going to, hey, I can stand there with the big cardboard check and say how wonderful things are and we can get tax money from them. Again, very short-sighted in my view. Anyway, to go on, again, if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all of them personally, and I occasionally use one or two of them on the air. Andy writes, talking about jobs, this article caught my eye. Companies like Facebook have no problem picking up foreign talent, giving them visas and moving them lock, stock, and barrel to the U.S., even though California has a 12% unemployment rate with many talented computer engineers looking for work. He points to this this Czech Republic citizen guy named Jacob Varna, who is a computer programmer. He evidently Facebook swapped him up, brought him here to the U.S. And he's excited about coming. And God bless him. I think I would be too. But what it is this whole H-2B visa thing. I hear Facebook is going to pay him big money. The problem with the H-2B visa is it ends up being in hands with people who are going to exploit them, much like the J-1 visa program. All of these things, as we've privatized them and we've starved government, we've cut the people who are taking care of these programs, what's happened is it's fallen into for-profit hands. And that's when people get exploited. And all of it then comes down to, and this is what I've been saying for the longest time, it's all privatization. It's all let business do what business wants. We need to be more business friendly. And what that usually leads to is you and me getting screwed. It's all designed to lower wages and take money out of the economy. And what's that going to leave us with? Well, it's going to leave us with a shrunken economy where the rich are doing fabulously well and you and I are fighting each other. If you remember, I talked about Procter & Gamble last night. Look, the corporate America is telling us the middle class is dead. We now live in an hourglass economy. A bunch of rich people at the top, whole lot of poor people at the bottom. Now, like I said earlier, dollar stores, they're the ones killing Walmart. The race to the bottom, look where it's taking us. And as I've said for the longest time, it is our trade deficits. It is our tax code. And if we had a more progressive tax code, like we used to have when we had a large, growing, burgeoning middle class that had prosperity and wealth, when we had a tax code that were the bigger shoulders, shouldered more of the burden, back in the good socialist years of Dwight Eisenhower and that time period, we would have a more prosperous, a happy society, if you will. And in fact, someone at the University of Virginia has issued a report, spent a good long time looking at this, saying that places where they have progressive tax policies, their citizens are happier because people have a greater degree of satisfaction with public goods such as housing, education, and, of course, public transportation. And the guy who did the study, professor there at the University of Virginia, said, it's the goals of a society to make citizens happy, and tax policy matters. He said certain policies like tax progressivity seem to be more conducive to the happiness of the people. And I know that the right doesn't care about the people, and that shows in the fact that since 1980, we have seen a massive increase in inequality and income disparity to where, of course, the wealthy are doing much better. But you and I, we're struggling, which is why you're seeing the Tea Party, which is why the Tea Party is so ticked off. And at the beginning, I was with them right there. I was ready to march until they said, well, the government's the problem. Corporations the answer. Dumb to me. But that's the direction, man.
At their funding, does that really surprise you? The fallacy is that they're this natural up, from the ground up, and people are just fed up with government, when the truth is there's a lot of big money behind these organizations from some very, very wealthy people, like the Koch brothers, for instance, Koch brothers.
Bless you. If you just want to make sure, because we want to make sure our board op and our main producer there is healthy and happy. You okay?
Yeah.
Good. Bless you. But, here's the thing. Christmas is around the corner, and we can all be happy about Christmas. What makes people happier than Christmas? Not much. I mean, you know, because, you know, the children and, the, you know, the Santa Claus and the cookies. And the good thing about, you know, the fact that we have this, this service-based economy is that Christmas, especially with the poor wages and the, you know, the slow economic growth and the lack of demand and, you know, all of the things that they're telling us are destroying the economy. Because actually Bernanke said he was surprised at the low consumer demand. And I'm going, really? You're surprised at that? When you're seeing incomes falling and you're seeing, you know, people having money taken out of their pockets, you're surprised that there's no real demand? Not too bright there, Ben. You're supposed to be a smart one here. But here's the good thing. USA Today reported that Santa's coming. And he's coming in September. Evidently, you know, we were complaining about, you know, Halloween being the day when all the Christmas stuff starts. September. It's already started. In fact, Kmart and Sears is going to start selling some Christmas stuff at the end of September, September 25th. Walmart and JCPenney also said that they're going to be selling Christmas merchandise before the end of the month. So good stuff. You know, we're... gotta love Christmas. In fact, AC Moore, one of the fabric, you know, the craft places, they've been selling Christmas stuff since August. Joanne Fabric, the people who make them, you know, sell that Chinese and Mexican made fabric, they've been selling, you know, Christmas stuff since July. So, you know, what I'm thinking eventually is going to happen. We should just have Christmas year round. And every day should be Christmas. We should just Christmas every day because it's such a happy time.
Is that your proposals for economic stimulus?
Yeah, fly naked and Christmas every day. That's the way to go, I think. I mean, we're being hawked to every day. I mean, the advertising world, they basically, here, please, buy something. And you know the best way to make Christmas happen every day? Make sure that workers have a reasonable pay. Make sure that there's some coin in their pocket. Because here's the thing. You can have Christmas decorations year-round. You can have sales year-round. If no one's got a little coin in their pocket, if there's nothing jingling in the pocket, you can have all the jingle bells you want. If there's nothing jingling in the pocket, there's nothing going to be jingling at the register, which means nothing is coming off the shelves. So, again, you know, we can have this whole Christmas thing year-round. To me, you're diluting the true meaning of Christmas. And at some point, I hope there's a rebellion. Because now I got to start listening to Bill O'Reilly with his Merry Christmas crap, which I'm already sick of. Because I've now made it a point that every person I come to, it's going to be Happy Holidays. And I'm going to start that now. Happy Holidays. Welcome to September. Evidently, we're going to be selling Christmas stuff on the shelves. Happy Holidays to you. Because we're nowhere near Christmas time. But they're hawking their goods. I mean, don't you think it's going to ruin the reason for the season, which is to be charitable and to be community-minded and giving, and it just kind of ruins it for me. But, you know, hey, corporate America, they've got to make their profit, and there you go. Speaking about religion, there's another interesting report in the USA Today that I thought kind of very accurate. This guy has written a book. His name's George Barna. He has written Future Cast, which is, you know, talking about religion in the U.S. He's tracked the changes in religion since 1991 to 2011. And he came up with some interesting findings, which are that, you know, saying that we're moving to a time where you're going to have 310 million people who have 310 million different religions. He says we are a designer society. We want everything custom to our personal needs, our culture, our food, our education, and, of course, now our religion, he says. And this is something I've been saying for the longest time. Every person you talk to, they have a different interpretation of what the book means. And oddly enough, the numbers, you people who are trying to bank on religion in the future, are trending downward. Evidently, the number of folks who attend church have gone down from 49 to 40% over the last 20 years, and people who read the Bible declined 45 to 40% over the last 20 years. Also, the number of people who volunteer at church, pretty sizable downgrade from 27 down to 19, and the number of people who believe the Bible is totally accurate, down 46 to 38. And one good sign for religion, there's an increase in the people who accept Jesus and expect to be saved and go to heaven. So, you know, there's a jump in that. So we all believe in Jesus, I guess, and we're all going to heaven. All good dogs go to heaven, I guess. But trending downward, which I find interesting, he came up with a phrase that I kind of like, hopscotch spirituality, where you just basically pick and choose. Which I guess if you look at the presidential candidates, kind of right there. I mean, if we're this Christian nation talking about frying people, if we're this grand Christian nation talking about denying them access to help during a disaster, if we're this grand Christian nation talking about allowing poverty to continue to rise as it has, I guess this guy's spot on. You know, maybe it is what it is.
Well, I mean, you talked about the presidential candidates. I mean, in my mind, the people who are the scariest, who have crazy ideas, some people could say they're just flat out wrong, but they believe that they're right because they believe that they have the backing of God and they have God's position. Those people are absolutely scary.
Yes, my God is better than your God.
Because
my bowl of pasta is smarter than your bowl.
To question them in their mind is to question God. That's scary.
There you go.
My God's bigger than your God.
General Boykins, yes. Thank goodness it's trending downwards. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Sitting at the kitchen table with Tom and his laptop.
My name is Tom, and I'm here today to learn how to save money on my prescriptions with Capital Blue Cross.
Capital's VP of Pharmacy Services, Meenock, is here. She's showing Tom how to use the Capital website to learn his prescription price before he heads to the pharmacy today.
You would want to know what is the cost of that medication to basically stretch your healthcare dollar, because that's your dollar.
The point is, members have options to save time and money. And if Tom wants to log on at 1 a.m. to renew a prescription, that's fine, too.
Having that flexibility to be able to order prescriptions at any time of the day or night is fantastic. And the mail order feature is really like a self-service feature. We love that.
Meenock doesn't usually make house calls, but today she's happy to help.
This is one of the ways we care more, so we do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
You know, we're coming up on the third anniversary of the Bush financial collapse. You know, the day Wall Street took a little intermission from the party. Well, the party is raging again. Profits flowing upwards. CEO bonuses never better. The champagne is bubbly and the rivers of gold and honey overflowing. Granted, not down to you or me. And the trickle-down thing doesn't work that way. But last night, the right-wing wrecking crew, Snow White and her seven dwarfs, were in full let poor Wall Street alone mode. So here to talk to us about the debate from T-Twizzler Central, Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service. Jeff, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, good to be with you, Rick.
So you're back from the Florida State Fairgrounds. Among the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, I assume they had other animals as well?
Well, there was a lot of tea in the audience, I'll tell you that.
One of the things that caught my attention right from the very beginning was this idea that somehow President Obama is innovation and strangling Wall Street. And I'm looking at the third anniversary coming up with a big collapse. Shouldn't we be doing something to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
Well, I can certainly tell you that is definitely not on the agenda of the Republican candidates running, at least, you know, according to what they've been saying at these debates. You know, maybe you look at a guy like John Huntsman, and you know, that's maybe something, you know, regulation might be something that he would support, but I don't think John Huntsman is getting enough traction given that these debates seem to be focused on primarily Rick Perry and Mitt Romney and the dynamic that's existing between the two of them in terms of who is vying for that top spot. Now, I think, you know, politically speaking, I think Rick Perry, you know, he obviously got off to a torrid start as soon as he announced his candidacy, but I don't think he's really been hitting it out of the park to the average voter and to independents mainly in these last two debates. And I thought that, you know, Perry, obviously, you know, he was seemingly attacked from all sides last night by Marcel Bachmann and Ron Paul and Rick Santorum and others, other lesser-tiered candidates. But, you know, I don't think he really did enough to leave voters with the impression that, you know, here's a guy who really, you know, has it all together. I mean, I thought that he, you know, obviously he pointed to his record of creating jobs in Texas, but other than that, I think that he sort of fell flat, and that's, I think, the general consensus today. It looks like Mitt Romney was able to benefit a little bit from those attacks, and if you look at new polling that came out today, it shows that voters are more more enthusiastic about Romney than they were, you know, a couple weeks ago. So that could be good news for the Romney camp. So we'll see where it goes from here. There's another debate, of course, on September 22nd in Orlando. The candidates will duke it out again. In the meantime, it promises to be, you know, an interesting race.
I hope they have a debate every other day. I mean, because the more you put them up on stage and the more they feel comfortable expressing their extreme ideology and this idea that we need to let Wall Street go, especially this week when you're talking about the third anniversary of the collapse of our near collapse of our economy, them wanting to take us back. In fact, Huntsman's one of the guys who said, we can't go forward with Dodd-Frank. No, can't do it because businesses in this country, there's no predictability there. They just can't do it. Bachmann's another one, you know, repeal Dodd-Frank. Perry right on the same bandwagon. We got to let Wall Street go. And I'm sorry, this is what got us into this mess. This, well, whatever you want, Wall Street, take it all. Go get drunk, do whatever you got to do. We'll clean up the mess behind you.
Yeah, certainly Bachmann, you know, one of the pillars of her campaign is that she would at least attempt to repeal Dodd-Frank, the financial reform law, if she became president. Now, obviously, you know, and I think some of the other candidates have hinted at their desire to do as much as well. You know, I think that there's an interesting report that came out today that, you know, a lot of folks probably wish came out last night because this would have been good fodder for the debate. But this new report on poverty in America, this yep. shocking report showing that, you know, America's poverty rate is now over 15%. There are 46 million people living in poverty in this country, almost one out of every six Americans. It's shockingly devastating news, and I would love to see the candidates respond to that, you know, in the context of their plans for growing the economy, because I think that it's you know, this report, it's very telling. There are a lot of folks out there that need assistance, that need help, I think the candidates, you know, should be asked about what their plans would be for that.
Well, we know what Ron Paul's plan would be. Screw them. You know, they'll take care of themselves. You know, it's not the government's place. And, you know, I listened to part of the debate, and he was, you know, he was talking about health care. And is it true that the audience basically cheered and screamed, let the people die if they don't have insurance?
Yeah, you know, I was asked about this a couple times. There was a part of the debate where Wolf Blitzer, the CNN moderator, turned to Ron Paul, and he said, here's a hypothetical. Suppose you have a guy who's in his 30s. He's diagnosed with tuberculosis, but he doesn't have health insurance. He doesn't qualify for Medicaid. What does he do? And Ron Paul's answer was that, you know, he should use his freedom, basically, use his liberty to get the means to take care of himself. In other words, he should be able to treat himself. He should figure it out and take personal responsibility. That was the essence of Ron Paul's response, which actually drew cheers from a couple members in the audience. I couldn't exactly, you know, the press is in a different room, so you don't have your eyes exactly peeled to the audience, but there were definitely noticeable and audible cheers. And then Wolf Blitzer followed that up with, well, should he be left to die? Ron Paul kind of hemmed and hawed, but some in the audience actually said yes. So it was, you know, assumed for all intents and purposes that members of the audience, and of course this is a debate that was co-sponsored by the Tea Party Express. There were a fair amount of Tea Party voters in the crowd last night, that it was them who shouted that. Now, to be fair, I had received a couple statements from Tea Party leaders. One of them, Billy Tucker, a woman who I actually spoke with yesterday, she's one of the Tea Party leaders down in Jacksonville, Florida, condemned that reaction. She said she didn't exactly know who cheered, but if it was a Tea Party member, she strongly condemned it, said that it has no place, you know, in the context of the debate or any other discussion.
So if she condemns it, what's the solution? What's the answer to the question then? Because, you know, I got to be honest, Ron Paul's answer was not, I'm sorry, it wasn't sufficient for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Ron Paul obviously didn't come out and flatly say, you know, no, we should, you know, leave this guy to die. I mean, I think Ron Paul's, the essence of his answer was that, you know, I mean, this is a guy who, he wants the government out of the picture in every single element of life. So, you know, he didn't necessarily repudiate.
What he said was, is he wants the churches involved in it. The churches should take care of it. And I go, well, so you want government out of my life, but you want a theocracy in my life. One of the most undemocratic organizations you can possibly have. That's who's going to take over?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would have loved another follow-up question on that. And, you know, perhaps this is a, you know, Ron Paul, he's been polling fairly well. I mean, he usually is in the top five. So I would think that, you know, anything that he says or does would merit a follow-up for the next debate.
Right.
Maybe we'll get one.
Yeah, I'm hoping that because, you know, that's the libertarian idea, their ideology. You're on your own, brother. And if something happens, tough luck. You know, you're basically on your own. And on one degree, you know, maybe that's okay. Maybe then we decide that we want to have a democracy where people come together and form organizations, oh, I don't know, like government, to help them insure themselves from catastrophe. You know, I thought we went down this path already, but I guess we have to reinvent that wheel. Speaking of reinventing the wheel, I guess, you know, I'm looking at Rick Perry's, you know, statements on Social Security being a Ponzi scheme and a monstrous lie. The folks you talked to in Florida, did they echo that sentiment, or is there any blowback? Because I can't imagine that seniors in Florida would look at this and go, oh, yeah, it's a Ponzi scheme.
You know, I actually talked to one or two older voters, and keep in mind, you know, Florida is a state with 17% of the population consisting of seniors, 65 and up. So it's very sensitive issue down there.
Right. Just like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is number two in the number of seniors.
Right. I did, in fact, speak to a couple voters who weren't necessarily completely enthralled with Rick Perry. One of whom, a gentleman from Orlando who made the trip down to Tampa, told me that, you know, basically, in his opinion, Rick Perry is a media, a creation of the media. He's a media darling. And so he sounded skeptical of Rick Perry and the fact that he sort of ascended to front-runner status despite having just got into the race, you know, about a month ago. So I don't think necessarily everybody there was in love with Rick Perry. I think a lot of folks were watching intently to see what he had to say about Social Security in particular. The Perry campaign seems to be sort of walking back those comments now. In the last week or so, they've issued numerous statements saying, you know, the governor does not want to end Social Security. He wants to preserve it. But I think the damage could be done on that issue, especially with Mitt Romney pouncing on him last night and you know, holding his feet to the fire over those statements. Now, Romney, to be fair and accurate, Romney has made a statement in the past that haven't been so exactly supportive of Social Security the way it is. He's suggested in the past that it's, you know, it's an illegal program as well.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, all the candidates need to be vetted in terms of their position on that issue.
Well, I think all of them would be in favor of, you know, giving it to the criminals on Wall Street and privatizing it.
Well, it's, you know, I can tell you that at least one or two of them have embraced the Paul Ryan plan, which would, of course, you know, turn Social Security into a non-guaranteed benefit for future generations.
And that's something that your generation and mine had better keep an eye on, because, you know, even if you buy into the, oh, it's in massive trouble, it's still going to pay out for years and generations to come. Maybe not the benefits that are guaranteed right now, but it's going to pay out. If we could tweak it a little bit, we could fix that system. And for me, the tweaking has to do with the cap. That would solve, I think, a large number of our problems.
Well, Jeff, I'll be honest with you, Rick. My retirement plan right now is to work till I'm 90.
Join the club. let's hope that not to be the case. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service. Appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
All righty, now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Okay, thanks, Rick. Local economist by the name of Joel Naroff. It appeared locally at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, and I thought it was interesting. It's an article in the Harrisburg Patriot. He said some interesting things, and ironically, he said some things that really jive with what the Obama administration was saying. He talked about the economy and how early part of the year the economy was showing some signs of coming out of it, and then several things happened. The price of gas went up by about $1.50, and according to this economist, for each penny that the price of gas goes up, you take about $1 billion of spendable income out of the economy. So if you do the numbers, because of the price of gas going up that substantially, he took out about $150 billion from the economy. He also talked about the Greek crisis. And some people say, well, how would that affect us? Well, simply because the British banks were the ones that held most of the debt for the Greeks. If that defaults, that would also have an impact on the American banks and the American economy. And that threat was actually something that very much held down the economy. But he said some interesting things, Eric. He said cutting government spending right now recklessly could lead to fewer jobs, which in turn could lead to less tax revenue. And this surprised me. He said there's quite a bit of tax breaks and special deals written into the tax code for businesses which don't create jobs, although we knew it. That's not the general perception. He said many of the breaks are for large corporations. He said while businesses with fewer than 50 employees create half of all the new jobs, and amazingly, businesses with 500 or less create almost all the jobs, and that's in line with the Obama tax breaks in his new proposal. He also said that government stimulus programs can help the economy, but sometimes they're a little slow to show results. He said shovel-ready programs, he said some of them are just getting started. Unfortunately, he said short-term can mean anywhere from 2 to 4 years. And again, I was pleasantly surprised that some of what he was talking about actually goes right in line with the proposals of the Obama administration for improving the economy. I got an email from our friend from York, Alan Vandersloot, who's the labor liaison down there for United Way, and he sent us some numbers, and I want to pass them on. The president has encouraged us to contact these leaders, and I know that most of us aren't represented by these people, but I want to give them to you, and I would suggest and encourage each one of you to take the time and call these numbers and tell them that you're in favor of the president's job program and the American economy needs it. John Bonner. His number is 202-225-0600. That's 202-225-0600. Eric Canner's is 202-225-2815. That's 202-225-2815. Mitch McConnell's is 202-224-2541. That's 202-224-2541. And Harry Reid, old Harry, 202-224-3542. That's 202-224-3542.
I missed those. Can you read them again? Let me jot that down.
You seriously want one of them?
No.
Okay. No, I'm serious. I think we, you know, and the more calls, the better, even though, like I said, most of the people in our audience aren't represented by these people, but each call could have a difference, could make a difference.
What you should just do is just call the Capitol switchboard.
You can do that, too. Okay. That's true. I forgot about that. But if you want to take the direct number, it's probably a lot quicker. If you go to the switchboard, you might have to wait. FEMA has announced that President Barack Obama has approved a disaster declaration for individual assistance for South Central Pennsylvania. I can tell you, Rick, I was in other parts of the state, and I think of all the parts of Pennsylvania, I think this storm really hit Central Pennsylvania. I know where I come from. There's an awful lot of devastation. This assistance can take the form of including grants for temporary housing and home repairs, low-cost loans to cover uninsured or underinsured property losses, and other programs to help people recover. The number, if you think you qualify, is 1-800-621-3362. Let me repeat that, 1-800-621-3362 if you think you qualify for any federal assistance, and I would encourage you to do that.
You got any other numbers you want to hand out?
No, I'm done.
All right.
But I do have a sad story I do have a sad story coming out of Philly, an AP story. Apparently a woman decided that she was going to give one of her kidneys to her sons. And her son was in bad shape. She was doing what a lot of parents would do. She told her employer. And her employer said, well, if you do that, when you come back, you might not have a job. And the company, when she took off to have that transplant to her son, which could have saved his life, by the way, the company that she worked for made her sign a statement to the effect that she was told. Well, she went and did it, and she came back, and they fired her. She took it to a TV station, WTXF TV. The TV station contacted the employer, whose name is Aviation Institute of Maintenance. And the company's answer was, well, under the law, we have a right to do that. And my first question is, well, you might have a right to do that, but is it the right thing to do? Who among us, Rick, who among us would not do what she did? Further, I'd like to ask those who made that decision and the owners of that company, if they were given the exact situation, wouldn't they do the exact same thing as this woman now? People are saying, well, isn't that covered by FMLA? Yes,
no.
It is.
No.
Well, yeah, it is.
Voluntary.
I believe you're wrong on that. The problem is this company's too small.
Oh, it's too small.
There was...
It's under 50?
That's correct. And, you know, the one party, the Republican Party, talks about family values, yet they are the party that insisted on exemptions, and here we have a situation where this mother did what any other compassionate human being would, protected their child, and she consequently lost her job. You know, and I thought about this. I mean, where is our sense of values? Where is that company's sense of values?
Their sense of value is in the bottom line, the profits that they give to their shareholders. That's all it's about.
Was she supposed to allow her son to die?
Yes. I mean, look at the debate the other night. Come on. You know, the crowd erupted in, let them die. Come on. It is what it is, brother.
Sad, sad, sad.
Yeah. You hear those stories and I want to take to the streets. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting their recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing, to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2nd, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began the first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that had been manufactured at the Hershey planing mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. Blocking the only exit, the Loyal Workers Club, loyal only only to management and greed, it began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized the renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon, the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Show again. I want to know what it is he did before, and I asked, do we really want him to do it again? He had an interesting little quip at the debate.
I would bring a sense of humor to the White House because America is too uptight.
In a lot of aspects, I think Herman's right there. I will agree with the Kane train right there. And speaking of doing it again, I remember a while ago we talked about the guy who was shoving meat down his pants. In fact, it was the second time he got caught shoving meat down his pants at the local grocery store. Well, I think this guy's got him beat. Evidently, in the mean town of Seatown, or as my wife says, Sea Lyle, in there in Carlisle. I guess it's a meat-heavy area. This guy decided he was going to go into the local Walmart and just started opening up packages and eating the meat right out of the packages. He was arrested for eating meat valued at $24.53. And guess what? And this is the amazing part of the story. For that $24.53 in meat that he sampled from, he will be charged with a felony theft. Charge a felony with mandatory jail time because it's his fourth retail theft conviction. It will be his fourth, and he could see some actual jail time for sampling meat. I don't know what it is about the Carlisle meat that has the thieves all a Twitter, but there they are, the meat people. For a quick update there in New York, numbers are coming in. It's real close at this point. I guess they're just waiting for the returns from Waukesha, Wisconsin. I'm sure they will find a computer with some missing votes on it tomorrow to make sure that the Republican wins. At this point, it's too close to call, so probably sometime after we're off the air. Story from Houston, Texas. Evidently, there's a large flower. It's called a corpse flower. It smells like the stench of rotting meat. It's expected to bloom in the coming days, according to the zookeepers. And I'm going, why exactly would you want an 8-foot-tall plant that smells like rotting meat to be anywhere near you? And again, it looks like one of those. Remember that movie Little Shop of Horrors? Looks like that, the big plant that eats people. So there you go. But again, Carlisle and its meat. Gotta love the meat. And finally, there was a guy in Illinois who broke into a restaurant, jimmied the cash register, and then he goes, you know what? I'm already here. I might as well make myself a sandwich. I might as well have lunch. And they're going, really? You're going to break into the place and then decide to, to have lunch? Well, that's what he did. And, they are now looking for him because, he stole their sandwich and he too will go to jail. But those criminals on Wall Street who took billions, they walked away free. You know why? They didn't take meat. They took nobody's meat. I guess that's the moral of the story. Leave the meat alone. Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests today. Of course, Dr. David Madeline from the Center for American Progress. Always great to talk to him. And Sari Stevens from Planned Parenthood. Again, always great information there. And, I look at this, and of course, Laura Clausen from Daily Coast. If you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com or Stitcher for your smartphone. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.